You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Something's coming.
Stand by.
Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 109, bitches. I'm Sean DeRager, and with me, as always, is Brad Henderson.
You're just coming off as, like, just kind of a jerk, Sean.
Sorry. Been on vacation for, like, a week and a half, and then now I'm back to work. So it's a bit, you know, fuck the world. With us, as well, BJ Colangelo.
How much Pokemon Go have you all been playing? Because that's the only reason that I'm talking to you both.
How much Pokemon Go?
Yeah. Are you playing?
Well, my kids and I, we all went for a walk yesterday, and we caught like five.
Amateurs.
They were super excited.
Well, good.
But
raising them right.
I drive like 5 minutes to work, and I sit in an office all day, so.
Hey, you can find Pokemon indoors.
There was one at my cubicle once.
There you go.
And then I was standing by the window. There was like a gigantic fire by near our work on the mountain. And someone was joking around about Pokemon Go. And I opened up my app and I just screamed out loud, "There's one!"
You know? Oh, no. I hope they didn't catch fire.
They like move away sometimes. You'd think there's one. And Brad thinks we're nerds.
That's fine.
Is Willow not playing?
No, she has no interest whatsoever.
Too cool for school, of course.
Push out your hipster glasses a little harder over there.
Wow.
No, I'm pretty sure the hipsters are playing.
Yes. Janice is
playing it, and she was like, "Hey," because I would like noticed it the other day, and I was like, "Number one, I didn't even know Pokemon was still a thing."
Oh, it's definitely still a thing.
I thought that shit died out years ago.
My son and his friend collect cards still.
Yeah, like, remember that one other, that like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Or whatever? I thought that was, like, the same thing, where it just, like, died out. No one really...
Nope.
And then all of a sudden, the people that made fun of everybody from playing Pokemon are playing Pokemon. Isn't that weird?
I never made fun of anyone for playing Pokemon.
No, I'm just saying...
No,
I really did.
I was one of those douchebags.
Oh.
Now I'm playing fucking Pokemon.
I never... Really, I mean, I don't care. I mean, people play it, gets them out of the house, gets some exercise, makes them happy. I don't give a shit.
Oh, my kids had a blast.
Some people are finding dead bodies, so, you know.
I mean, if I got to play and found dead bodies, then that would be different. But I have zero interest in that.
It's all
good. Is this when they announce that they're going
to
remake Stand By Me, but it's going to be four kids playing Pokemon Go and they find a dead body?
Ooh.
Holy shit.
Give me a million.
Shit,
give me a million dollars, Hollywood. I'm brilliant. I appeal to the hip new teens.
I had an 80s type action dream where I came up with a movie in my dreams.
Did you write it down?
I did. I woke up immediately and wrote it down. Hold on. I'm trying to find what I wrote about it. We're camping. We're at this, not really camping. We call it glamping because we're at this place called Campland by the Bay in San Diego.
And so it's one of those fancy schmancy campgrounds with bathrooms.
Kind of, yeah, bathrooms and showers. But I was playing it rugged. I showered in the camper.
Whoa.
Watch.
Dang,
out.
You went out. That's like the outdoors.
Yeah. But the kids had a blast, and that's all that matters. We were right by the beach, so it was cool. But this one night, I bought a tall boy of Budweiser and Clamato Picante.
That makes me want to throw up.
And it's like a michelada. Michelada? Michelada? I don't know. Those of you who are from Mexico or enjoy Mexican cuisine could probably tell me how to pronounce that. Michelada? Tomato juice and...
You're butchering a heritage. Beer? Just...
Totally,
continue.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Budweiser, Clamato, Picante is concerned about Mexican heritage either, but I felt like a total white trash drinking it. But that night,
Jesus,
I had the craziest dream. I had a dream. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Noah. Perfect.
Uh-oh.
Is Noah saying he wants to watch The Wire?
His brother called him a liar.
Oh, that's shit.
Cool.
I bet you won't hit him, Noah. I bet you won't hit him.
That's a bad word.
Yeah, so is fuck, Noah. Did you hear that?
Oh, my God. Your wife would kill us.
That's awesome. Hey, hold on one second. Let me get this kid back to bed. Hold on. No, no, no food. I'll be right, I'll be right back and continue the story.
He wants some food.
You heard it here first, folks. Sean DeRager starves his children. That joke would have been way funnier had I not stumbled on basic third grade words.
I know, it would be funny if Noah said in the background, "You haven't fed me tonight, Daddy."
He never feeds us. Can you change the pillow in the closet?
Can I even have a pillow tonight?
We find out this whole time that Sean's been keeping his kids under the staircase like they're Harry Potter or Carrie White. They're like interchangeable. All four of them in one staircase room.
Four?
Three. I forgot how to count.
No, I'm saying once you have more than one kid, you might as well have 20. That's what it's equivalent to.
Like, yeah, that's very true.
So, kids, so much fun. Not really.
I'm glad that I don't have them. It's going pretty well. I got back from LA yesterday.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're having our own conversation now.
Oh, okay.
Sean.
Damn it. Yep. All right.
You missed it.
So I'm back.
So, all right. So tell us your dream story. It's taking fucking forever now.
So basically, it's 80s era Arnold Schwarzenegger, 80s era Kurt Russell, and 90s era Richard Riley, the guy from Office Space who gets hit by the car.
Yeah.
So basically, the setup was two ex-Marines, Schwarzenegger and Russell, somehow get wrapped up in a terrorist plot that takes over a gigantic hardware warehouse distribution center with the help of the bumbling warehouse manager, Riley. They alone must take down the terrorists before the terrorists can take down the city. That was my dream.
Huh.
It was awesome. Now,
to be fair, isn't like, to me, Arnold Schwarzenegger has always been like 80s Schwarzenegger.
80s are...
like, no matter, like, even, like,
do you think
like,
it
today,
still,
like,
it's still, could it be relevant? Because all three of them are still active.
No, I know that, but I'm saying, like, I don't know if Arnold Schwarzenegger doesn't know any other way, like, other than probably Maggie, the zombie movie, like, he's been, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger 80s, like, the Red Heat, you know, type of, in Commando. Basically, Commando is, like, his definitive role because he took that role of John Matrix and then spread it across every fucking action movie he was ever in.
Yeah.
And he has that Arnold Schwarzenegger stare. That's all he does.
Yeah.
Like, you know that saying, that quote from Tropic Thunder where he says, "I don't break character till I've done the DVD commentary"? A lot of his movies just haven't hit DVD apparently, because he has not checked out.
He's fun. He's a fun actor because he doesn't try to go above and beyond. So yeah, I think he would be great for this role. Who was the other one?
Kurt Russell.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Yeah, Kurt Russell's good in anything.
So I woke up.
I'd watch Kurt Russell in literally anything.
Can we get Breakdown on Blu-ray? Is Breakdown on Blu-ray yet? Isn't this a crime?
That needs to happen.
Like, we have Black Dog on Blu-ray with Patrick Swayze, but we don't have Breakdown.
It's a crime.
You know what else we don't have? We don't have fucking Firestorm with Howie Long, and I'm sure a lot of people don't remember that movie. Just to speak of Black Dog. If we have Black Dog on Blu-ray, we should have Firestorm. Just saying.
I agree. Well, anyway, I woke up from that dream, and I immediately opened up my notes app, and I'm getting kisses from my daughter now. Okay, good night, everybody. Go. Okay.
Wow.
Everyone's just, come on in. Come on in, everybody. Let's do a podcast. Everybody.
Daddy doesn't give us kisses. Right. Good night. Go.
Good night.
Take down the patriarchy. Bye.
She just got back from ballet.
Even more reason to take down the patriarchy. Bye.
Yeah, totally. So I jotted that down, and it was awesome. Anyway, how did we get on that? I forget.
I don't know. You've been telling this story for like 30 minutes.
I don't know. It'll be edited down by the time.
No, leave it all so people know like how professional this actually
okay.
is.
Okay. How much work was there? Did you and BJ launch into a conversation as I left?
We tried, but we got brutally interrupted.
We sure
God
did.
Damn it. Do you guys want to continue that conversation? BJ, you were in L.A.
I was in L.A., and that's exactly what you interrupted.
Okay, let's hear it, and then we'll jump into what's on our doorstep.
Sure. I was in L.A. this past weekend for a couple of reasons. I got to meet up with some of my friends and coworkers from Blumhouse and Icons of Fright and all that, you know, cool writing noise. But that was really surreal for me, because they're people that I've talked to every day for, you know, 5+ years, but I've never actually met in person. So that was really exciting. And I am pretty sure that I smashed Rob Galuzzo with hugs. I couldn't help it. It was so awesome to finally meet all those people. I did a little bit of, you know, touristy stuff. I went and saw the Elm Street house like you do. But the main reason that I was in Los Angeles is that Jerry Smith, who is the editor-in-chief of Icons of Fright and a dear friend of mine, was directing his first short film. It's called Love is Dead, and I went out there to act as his first AD and, you know, kind of like line producing, more so just keeping shit in line and keeping everyone on task. You know, my boyfriend Zach was shooting it, and our production company produced it, but the big news was originally, when Jerry did kind of the crowdfunding thing for this film, it was slated to star Aaron Thompson, aka Small Hands, who is an adult film star, and Tristan Risk. But because of some complications with, you know, flying somebody from Canada into the States to do a film and all the legalities that go with that, we unfortunately had to recast. But luckily, AVN Hall of Famer Joanna Angel of Burning Angel Productions happily stepped into the role. And, oh my God, you guys, she's incredible. In-fucking-credible. And that is a 100% completely unbiased look at somebody. I've never been more captivated watching somebody just give it their all in a film before. She's remarkable, and I really hope that people see this and, you know, want to work with her in the future for non-pornographic roles. I mean, Sasha Grey made the jump. Joanna can make the jump. She's wonderful. So it was a great experience. I had a total blast. And of course, when it comes out, you know, you guys will get to see it. And
nice.
Then you can tell everyone whether or not we suck at what we do. But
I'll just be honest with it.
Well, obviously. No shit, I'd hope so. But it was a total blast. I love Los Angeles, and, you know, it pained me to get off the plane in Cleveland and know that we're prepping for the RNC next week. And, like, the first thing I see when I get out of the gate is a clothing stand with shirts on it that say Republicans versus everybody. And I was like, oh, fuck. Why did I get off this plane?
You need to go
Why
to the RNC and distribute porn to everyone there, because apparently it's, you know, pornography is part of the downfall of civilization or something.
Well, there is going to be a nude art exhibit that's going up as a form of, like, protest. Like, this photographer's coming in, and I think he's shooting something like 500 naked people, like, right outside the RNC. Got his permit and everything. It's going to be really cool. But,
awesome.
Yeah, I work in kind of the heart of downtown Cleveland, and we've already started getting all of our warnings of, you know, traffic's going to be terrible, leave for work 2 hours early. Just,
you know what you do is somehow,
a nightmare.
Somehow find that Playboy with Donald Trump on the cover and just start passing that out.
Oh my God, that's a great idea.
I don't know if they can reproduce
really
it
idea.
That fast, but at least the cover.
I can just get the cover. I mean, I do work at a printing company. Just,
oh my God.
That's why are you such a bad influence? You're supposed to be the dad. God.
Hey, look, kids, see that? That's authority. Fuck authority. And then we, you know, play some punk rock and
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Today we are talking about Vinegar Syndrome's May package. They do not have a June package, but they are getting ready to release their July package.
I'll talk about anyone in Vinegar Syndrome's packages.
For everyone. So today we'll be talking Psychic Killer and Rudy Ray Moore's The Human Tornado, as well as these two Picarama DVDs that were part of that.
Probably Picarama, but whatever.
What'd I say?
Picarama.
Peak is Peak-a-rama.
Have you looked at the Picarama DVD, Sean?
Picarama. Is it Picarama? Is this
Peak-a-rama?
Tomato? This is a tomato tomato bullshit.
And one is right. One's wrong.
He's looking at the dirty movies, Brad. Just let him have his dirty movies.
Okay.
Hey, do you have any dirty movies, Sean?
I got a few. We'll be giving them away too today.
Does your video store have a back room asking for a friend?
I remember the old video store in Garner, Iowa. They had the porn closet, curtain, basically curtained it off.
Oh, it's always a black curtain, or it's some like psychedelic beads.
Yeah,
every time.
So we'll be giving away my big old box of porn. These two Peak-a-rama.
There you go.
DVDs will be a part of that.
There you go, Sean. You're doing such a good job on the podcast.
We got about 20 emails to read, so we need to get going on this, getting through this show. But thank you for all of you who participated. The emails were fantastic. I can't wait to share them with everyone. But first, we need to jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow. I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
I'll go first. I only have one. And I saw this movie in Los Angeles at the Bigfoot Lodge, which is kind of a cabin-themed bar that plays punk rock music. Mm-hmm. But in the back of the bar, they had a movie projecting on the screen, and there's no sound, obviously, because it's in a bar. But it was this weird, 70s sexual witch movie that I had never seen before. And all the people I was there with are all film people. So we tracked down the bartender. We're like, what the fuck is this movie? And it is a movie called Black Magic Rites.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. My God. I have no idea how this movie went past me, but it is like a crazy... It's like so 70s, but it's...
It's on Blu-ray. I think Kino put that out or something.
Well, I don't have the Blu-ray, but I tracked down... I bought it online and, pirate it. But I bought it so I could watch it. And it's bonkers. It reminds me of, the Ken Russell stuff. It's just... It's so weird and great. But it's about a group of people that are sacrificing... women to resurrect the spirit of a ghost that was burnt, or ghost, a witch that was burned at the stake 400 years prior. But it's just nothing but really psychedelic cinematography and titties. Yeah. It's the best. It's so good. I loved it. And, shout out to the Bigfoot Lodge for showing weirdo movies in the back and making me track them down. But I highly recommend that.
Did you ever see Delirium?
Yes.
And it's by the same director.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense now. See, this is why I keep you around, because I'm really bad at
director. He also did a giallo film called Cold Eyes of Fear.
How do you know all this shit? How does all this shit stay in your brain, Brad? That's what I know.
Well, because I really like
IMDb.
I like Blood Magic Rites. Redemption put out Cold Eyes of Fear and Black Magic Rites.
Cool.
And they're on Blu-ray. Yeah. And then Delirium is by Blue Underground, I think.
I'm definitely going to track down pretty much everything that director's done, because it was...
Oh, Cold Eyes of Fear is so cool. Great. Delirium's really good, too, if you
I like Delirium. What's Cold Eyes of Fear about? I haven't seen that one or heard of
it. It's a black look killer movie. That's all it is. It's just cinematography and shit like that, and hypersexualized. If that's what you say, hypersexualized?
Yeah, hypersexualized. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just really, it's just that. It's your kind of, general you know, giallo kind of esque film. It's just, I don't know. He has a very, it's like, I forget his name though. It's like Renitti, something like that.
It looked super Italian or Spanish. I couldn't tell.
Yeah. I can't remember, like Ronaldo or something like that. Well, anyways, he's had some pretty great movies. He has more than that. I'm trying to remember some more, but none are coming to mind. But yeah, he's a pretty fucking good director.
Sweet.
I know I've seen more of his filmography, but I'm just drawing a blank.
Cool.
But anyways, yeah, it's a really good movie. I really suggest picking that up on Blu-ray. It looks really fucking good on Blu-ray.
I think
Cold Eyes of Fear though is out of print though on on Blu-ray though. I'm checking that right now. But anyways, go ahead.
Right on.
No, that was anything it. That's else? All I've seen. And then I watched the Netflix show Eastsiders, but that has nothing to do with horror. But it is it's a queer web series that got picked up by Netflix. And I really enjoy it. They're all 10-minute episodes too, since it was a web series. So it's a very quick watch. So if you're interested in any sort of, queer cinema, I highly recommend Eastsiders. And that's all I have because I was making my own movie.
I don't really have anything horror related at all, but, just want to give a shout out. The documentary, 1977 documentary Pumping Iron with Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno is on Netflix. And if you've never seen it, it's pretty damn great. I love seeing young Schwarzenegger.
You're all about Schwarzenegger tonight.
I don't know. That's why I watched it, because I had that dream. So then I was through Netflix. I saw that. And I was like, oh shit, I've never seen Pumping Iron. I've heard of it. So if you want to watch a bunch of, roided out bodybuilders just, grunting and sweating and oiling up, then, it's funny seeing a young Lou Ferrigno too, because, he's like 24 years old, and there's, a scene where he's like, he's always training with his dad, and he just looks like, it's just like, dude, you got to lose the dad. You know? And at one point, his voice cracks, and he's doing this, he wants to beat Schwarzenegger, and he's like, I'm gonna beat him! And that's exactly how he said it. So. Anyway, really funny.
Just like hearing you say that.
I'm gonna bait him. That's exactly how he said it.
I have a good Lou Ferrigno story after you're done.
Okay, and then I saw Batman v Superman director's cut or ultimate cut or whatever the hell, and I think it flows better from what I've read about the theatrical cut, but it's still if you didn't like the dourness of it and the super seriousness of it. With the like 10 minutes of crazy comic book movie awesome action, then you probably still won't like it. But I had fun with it, but I think Wonder Woman stole the whole movie away from everyone involved. Her bit was awesome when she started fighting Doomsday.
Ugh, I couldn't stand that movie. I'll have to rewatch the ultimate cut. Whenever, but man, that movie is fucking... is awful.
It's a 3-hour commitment to rewatch it. So Jesus. I'm always like, look, if you didn't like it in the first place, maybe, I don't know, maybe there were some critics saying they're like, it's a whole different movie. It's incredible. And I was like, I don't think it's a good movie still. This isn't like a Kingdom of Heaven where that movie was totally saved by the director's cut. It flows better. Jesse Eisenberg still sucks. Ben Affleck's not that good of a Bruce Wayne. He's not that good of at serious acting in this role. I don't know. He's pulled some stuff off, but he seems very flat. My wife kept saying, like, here comes Benny Boy playing dress up whenever Batman would come out. But I don't know. Why I wanted to mention it though was Vudu is starting to do digital and disc options. So for $19.99, I was able to get this. This is cheaper than Amazon was selling it for. And I was going to buy the Blu-ray anyway, just because I want all the special features, and I like where they're going with Into Justice League and all that kind of stuff. I think this is a stepping stone movie. Doesn't really hold on its own, but you can pay $19.99 on some of these movies that are released early digital, and then when the release date rolls around, they'll send you the Blu-ray, which is a pretty fantastic deal. They did that with Green Room, so I got that a week early, but then I went on vacation. I couldn't watch it, but I should have the Blu-ray arriving at some point. It came out today as we're recording this. Yeah. But it's a pretty cool option that they're doing. I think they've done it for one other movie. So that's something to keep an eye on with Vudu.com. It's kind of like the best of both worlds. Since they all start releasing digital early, if they have the digital / disc option, it's not any more expensive. And just keep an eye out for that.
That's also, RIP Anton Yelchin, speaking of Green Room.
Yeah.
I forgot that happened.
What the fuck?
Since the last time we recorded. That's just such a shame. He's so good.
Yeah, and it was almost like it had to be. It was such an odd way for him to go. No pun intended. Odd Thomas, you know. But it was such a crazy.
You're the only thing about that,
huh?
So you're the only one that would think
probably.
About
that. Yeah, I didn't catch that at all.
You know, but it's such a weird way for him to go too. It seemed like a hoax, and it's just one of those things. It's like apparently the Jeep Cherokee that he had a faulty parking brake or something. And I guess there was a recall out for these cars, and he had either hadn't got the notice or hadn't taken it in yet or whatever. And it sounds like he just went to check the mail, parked the car in the steep driveway, went down towards the mailbox, and it must have ran, you know, parking brake must have come off. It's crazy. And he's such a young talent. Like, He's one of those actors that got better and better with each role. And he always had an energy to him in any movie he was in, even if the movie wasn't that good, he was always good in it. So, yes, it's a shame.
Yeah. Green Room's great. Watch it.
I'll be watching that this weekend for sure. It's on the agenda.
One of the best movies of the year.
So here. All right, Brad, what you got?
First, I need to start with, I made a mistake. His name is Renato Pulcelli, and, Enzo Castellari did Cold Eyes of Fear. So I made a mistake.
Okay.
Cold Eyes of Fear is not out of print. It's available on Blu-ray. Still a great movie, but I'm getting a movie confused with something else because Cold Eyes of Fear is not really a giallo film, because that's the Cold Eyes of Fear that I was thinking about, because I looked at it, I was like, that's the movie where, like, the gunman's in the house and shit, and, like, kidnaps, like, the husband and wife. So I don't know what movie I'm talking about where he did a giallo, but he did do Delirium, and of course he did Black Magic Rites. So anyways, I'm just correcting my mistake, so I am not IMDb. but anyways, pick all those movies up. Every Enzo Castellari film, because he's one of kind. So I got a little bit on my doorstep, not a whole lot. I got around to watching Jacob Gentry's Synchronicity, which I was super pumped about seeing.
Oh, yeah.
I did see this movie like 2 years ago. I saw a rough cut of it because I'm a pretty big AJ Bowen fan and have been compared to AJ quite a bit as looks go, because we're both pretty good looking. So I got to see it. I think Jacob Gentry's kind of an amazing talent. He's got a great eye.
I agree completely.
You know, he's got Synchronicity looks fucking fantastic. I don't know what but Sean, Synchronicity is right up your alley, because it's like it's like super sci-fi, like time travel and shit. It's cool. It didn't grab me, though. I finally got to see this final cut on Blu-ray that Magnet put out. I wasn't 100% on board. I feel that the movie does take a different toll in such kind of a love story, kind of thriller rather than kind of the time travel aspect. But I can't, like, I want to see Jacob. I can't imagine Jacob Gentry with a big budget, like what his movie would look like, because I mean, everything from, you know, The Signal to, you know, his, you know, even his, like, trilogy that he did for MTV, the slasher films that he did, My Super Sweet Psycho 16 or whatever it's called.
Like, yeah, those, Super Psycho Sweet 16 is so underappreciated.
Yeah, like, the first one's really good. I mean, they do kind of progressively get a little kind of goofy, but the very first slasher that he did was fucking pretty cool for MTV, you know? But, I mean, the movie looks good. Costumes are great. You know, he's just a great cinematographer, and Synchronicity looks fucking fantastic. The sets that are designed, it looks like a billion-dollar movie. It's just really cheap and independent. I mean, you're thinking that you're watching something from the 80s, like, you know, in the same world as Blade Runner with this shit going on. But it's just a very small little indie about time travel. But it kind of goes with the love story side that I said before. So definitely check it out. Jacob Gentry is definitely a talent. I thought this was a pretty creative flick. It just didn't catch me. Hopefully it catches you.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, so I was going to be checking it out for sure. So,
we have up next was Arrow's Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
Ooh.
Which I've always been a big, big fan of the whole entire series, even Killer Tomatoes Eat France, Killer Tomatoes Strike Back, the animated series. I just kind of like the whole attitude that John DiBello has on these movies, where he's completely cool with just having fun and kind of escalating it each time. I know that a lot of people kind of don't really care for Attack of the Killer Tomatoes because of the comedy, but to me, the comedy's brilliant. It has all types. It's very smart. It has toilet humor. It has everything. With Return of the Killer Tomatoes, they just wanted to amplify that by three and fucking, you know, get fucking George Clooney, who steals the show.
Holy shit, George Clooney's in this?
Yeah, he's
he's
basically the co-star. He's like basically one of the leads.
Wow.
George Clooney is one of the funniest motherfuckers in the movie. Not to spoil anything, but if you haven't seen Return of the Killer Tomatoes, you need to watch it. But this isn't really a spoiler. Halfway through the movie, they basically shut down. They're like, "All right, cut. We don't have enough money to finish this movie." And the camera turns to like the cast and crew and the director, and they're like, "We're done." And then George Clooney like comes out. He's like, "Come on, guys! Look, this is the 80s." He's like, "How about if we do product placement?" And so they go into another scene of just product placement.
Holy shit! With, like, Wayne's World totally stole that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much Wayne's World type thing, but they're actually doing it for funds for the movie because they're like, "All right, here we have, you know." They have a whole scene where he's like, "Oh man, I'm thirsty." He's like, "How about a Milwaukee's Best?" You know, and he's like, "Oh, I'm hungry." And he's like, "How about a Crunch Bar?" And so they keep doing it. And then finally they're like, "Oh, we have enough money." But George Clooney keeps up the act for a good portion of the movie where he keeps doing it. And it's just, it's hysterical. The whole entire movie is goofy. It takes a lot of the old actors and characters and brings them in and carries them over, you know, from Finletter to, you know, kind of his sidekicks, the guy that does the disguises, the underwater person. You know, I just think it's an all around fun movie and also kind of cool for kids, too. The second one kind of has some sexual stuff going on, but for the most part, I don't know. I think having your kids kind of watch these movies, I don't know, they're silly. I don't know. They always got me. Were you ever a fan of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, Sean? Like the very first one?
The first one's great. I mean, it's been forever since I've seen it. I'm kicking myself for not getting the DVD because it's out of print now, and every time someone has it, it's goddamn expensive.
You should have told me. I sold mine, like, the other day.
Damn you.
Because it's on Vudu.
This weekend.
Is it on Vudu?
Yeah, it's on Vudu. That's the reason why.
It's not Vudu. I'll just grab it.
I sold it for comes out. A good amount of money. So whatever.
I know. You know? Good for you, man. No, I'll get it on Vudu if it's there.
It's like Rhino put that out or something like that.
Someone will do it on Blu-ray soon.
Yeah,
maybe
I imagine
will or somebody.
Well, let's hope not. but the transfer, everything looks great from Arrow. They, I love when they pick movies that I love. It's even better because I enjoy it on a totally different level. So definitely pick up Return of the Killer Tomatoes. What else did I see? I think that's it for that.
Have you seen
the other ones?
Yet?
No.
Damn it.
The other ones that I saw, this just came out. I believe it just came out on Blu-ray. It's, I think it's on Netflix as well. It's, Karen, Kusama's, The Imitation, which spoke about a couple times on the show already. I saw this at South by Southwest 2015. And it played at actually Fantastic Fest 2015. It's been on Vudu for quite some time, but it just came out on Blu-ray. This is, if it wasn't for Green Room, this would have been my number one movie of last year. This is the type of shit that I love because I love slow burns. And when they're executed as well as something like this, I can't speak more highly of a film of this caliber to have such good characterization and getting to know everybody and giving so much exposition, but at the same time giving the sense of dread that the film starts off with. I mean, because as soon as you're at this dinner party and you meet basically Logan Marshall Green, aka Tom Hardy, you put him in this movie and you're like, you know, he's driving to the dinner party. He gets in the car. I mean, he gets in the car, drives to the dinner party, and then he gets to the dinner party and you're like, man, something is fucking wrong. Like something's not right about this movie. And you figure it out fairly quickly because they let it be known like, hey, this is what's happening. But then you have the character be like, no, this isn't fucking like something's wrong. And we need to do something about it. And you're like, but nothing's really happened. Nothing's wrong, Tom Hardy. It's cool. Logan Marshall Green looks exactly like Tom Hardy. It's fucking crazy. So it's like, Tom Hardy, just fucking calm down. But it's like watching the movie. It's like you light a stick of dynamite and you close your eyes and you're just waiting for that shit to explode. And you don't know when it's going to. And that's what, like, watching the movie is like. You're watching it and you're like, fuck, something's going to happen. Is it going to happen here? Is it going to happen here? And it's just edge of your seat the whole entire time. And once it's executed, oh my God, it's so fucking good. The whole movie is fucking brilliant. I've yet to see too many films that have that sense of dread to make you anxious through its entirety. Not too many films can do that. And I get really sick and tired of hearing, well, nothing happens. Dude, underlying that movie, a lot of shit is fucking happening. And it is fucking scary. So I dig that quite a bit. So pick it up, Blu-ray, Netflix, whatever you want to watch it. Karen Kusama's done some fucking great movies. She did Girl Fight. She did – what was that last movie she did? Fuck. My human IDB.
Jennifer's Body, man.
Yeah, Jennifer's Body. Which,
come on.
I'm dumb. Why didn't I think of that? all right. So next up, I think this is my last one until we get to the other shit. I picked up Arrow's Satan's Blade, which I could compare to Olive's Blu-ray, but I got rid of Olive's Blu-ray because this was coming out. Because honestly, like, Slasher Video is awesome that they put the movies out, but I can go blindly in that knowing that Arrow's Blu-ray is going to be better.
Well, the framing was off on the Olive one for sure because you kept seeing the boom mic.
Well, that's cool. I like that they did that. but you know what Arrow did? They have both versions.
Did the boom mic version of this one too?
Yeah, they have the 185 and they have the 4.3.
Huh, okay.
Like, I was like, how fucking cool is that shit? If you want to watch a movie that doesn't have that shit, because the director claims that there's no continuity problems in this movie whatsoever. Dude, in the interview, he says, I wanted to make sure that my film didn't have continuity issues like Star Wars. And I was like, dude, that is so good. So anyways, I really have always liked Satan's Blade. Watching it again. I've seen this movie like three times this year.
We did a show on it, for Christ's
sake. We did a show on it. So I won't spend too much long. You should listen to that episode. But, you know, with something so small like this, where there's not a lot of, there wouldn't be a lot of special features, because mainly they get the director. The director did his own scan of the movie. So that's what you see, which is, pretty fucking cool. It's basically the same transfer. The 4x3 is the same transfer as Olive, but they actually present this in the 185, which is a lot better, because you don't get all the goofy boomite shit and everything like that. There's two interviews on this Blu-ray, which you said there's one with this guy that's wearing like flames on his shirt. It's like named like Jimmy Pop or something like that. Not Bloodhound Gang Jimmy Pop. I don't know. That name just popped in my head. But a really awful interview. Like, the most common question is, like, what was it like working with your cast and crew? Dude, do you know anything about this movie? This is fucking Friends. Like, they never did any other movies. Like, what the fuck? What kind of camera did you use? Really awful interviews for the most part, but hilariously painful. Because the director never looks at the camera. And one interview is like fucking 45 minutes long. And I don't know if his grandson, that's probably 7 years old, is operating the camera. Like, the focus, like, everything's zoomed in. Like, everything's out of focus, number one. Whenever he's showing something, the camera zooms in like super up close to it, to the point where you can't even see it. And the whole interview, even when the camera is, you know, pulls back, all you see is his tummy the whole entire interview, because he's standing. And instead of having everything prepped out or prepped and like out and laying about so he can pick it up, he has like everything sealed. So he's like opening packages, showing his like old posters of the movie, showing the tapes, and basically saying the same stuff he'd said in the other interview. It's hilariously painful and very entertaining if you can stomach kind of the goofiness of it. But definitely a fun slasher film. If you've never seen it, I suggest picking. If you want to pick up the Olive movie edition, that's fine. Just watch it. It's a lot of fun. So that's pretty much it, man. That's all I have.
All right, we'll be talking about Vinegar Syndrome's May package in just a little bit, and then we'll be having our Sean's Big Box of Porn drawing. Can't wait to get to some of these emails. But first, we need to jump into the news with Josh Obershaw. What's up, man?
It's good. It's good to be back.
Awesome.
It's been a long time.
Yep, we keep taking breaks. That's okay.
Yeah, because we got a lot of news to cover, so it's gonna be an interesting segment for sure.
All right, man, it's all you.
Right, let's get down to it. For those of you who missed out on that collector's edition of Tenebrae that Synapse put out earlier this year, well, they are going to be releasing a single disc version. It's pretty much going to be the same. It's going to have a lot of the same bonus features, if not all of the same bonus features. The single disc version, according to Synapse, does not come in the collectible steelbook packaging. They're not dual format, and it will not contain the CD soundtrack or the collectible booklet. But it's pretty much the same thing. If you're just looking for the movie, here's your chance to get the movie in high definition. So that's Tenebrae, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I want the main reason why I want the Synapse disc is because it has that that documentary about Giallo. So that's the main reason why I wanted it, but I didn't want to pay like $40, you know, because I already have the Arrow release.
Exactly. So
it's nice that they did that. They did the same thing with Demons, but they didn't bring in over all the special features on Demons. It was just like, I don't think they did. It was just pretty much bare bones for Demons 1 and 2.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but I had bought the Arrow version of Demons 1 and 2 anyway, so I just wanted the better picture, so it all worked out. It seems like they do this when they do these crazy collectible things that are a little bit pricier. People who can afford it and want to get it, they're happy. But people, you know, I guarantee you they'll you know, give it a few months, they'll announce, you know, the standalone kind of budget version. It seems to be the pattern.
Yeah, hopefully it becomes more of a trend.
Yeah, so nobody needs to really complain and whine if they can't afford a $50 steelbook. I was one of those whiners and complainers, so.
Well, that feature-length documentary on Giallo is going to be on this Blu-ray. Just want to make that clear for everybody out awesome. There. Next up, Olive Films and Slasher Video are teaming up again, and this time it's for the 1987 film Man Killers, which is from the director of Deadly Prey and Killer Workout. That dude's name is David A. Pryor. And let's see, the only bonus feature that was listed was optional English subtitles. And when is that coming out again? September 13th. So if you're a fan of those films that came out on Blu-ray from Slasher Video, you know, Deadly Prey, Killer Workout, this would be right up your alley. So that takes care of that. And, this is going to be the point of time in the summer where companies are going to be revealing information on all of their October titles, because, you know, October's the big month when it comes to horror. So,
hell yeah.
Yep. So the first one that I want to get to is we've got details on Blue Underground's 3-disc limited edition of Lucio Fulci's Manhattan Baby. And this is
excited for this one.
Oh, so am I. What do we got? We got a brand new 2K high definition transfer from the original uncensored camera negative. We have Fulci and I, interview with composer Fabio Frizzi. We've got For the Birds, an interview with star Cosimo Cinieri. Hope I said that right. 25 Years of Fulci, an interview with makeup effects artist Maurizio Trani. Beyond the Living Dead, an interview with co-writer Dardano Sacchetti. Stephen Thrower on Manhattan Baby. It's an interview with the author of Beyond Terror, the films of Lucio Fulci. He was also a guest on the Screamcast some time ago. Manhattan Baby Suite. This is a live studio performance by Fabio Frizzi. Excellent. Theatrical trailer, poster, and still getting a this collectible booklet featuring new writing from author Troy Orth. And a bonus, the Manhattan Baby soundtrack by Fabio Frizzi. And this one is going to be coming out on... Where is it? that is going to be October 25th. So, yeah, just in time for Halloween. So keep an eye out for that one. Pretty sure Blue Underground will eventually make a regular version of that, too, since we were talking about Santa Fe.
I don't know. They generally don't do that, but this is going to be a decent price. So if you want, it's probably going to you're going to be able to grab it. It won't be some inflated price. So I don't think Blue Underground does the re-releases like standalone, like something that Grindhouse Releasing would do.
That's exactly what I was. That's what I was thinking. It's going to be more like Grindhouse stuff. It's pretty good price. So I'll be sure to keep an eye for that one. So, and maybe October 25th. So, in the interim, while we're on vacation, Stream Factory, well, Chow Factory in general, just dropped a bunch of titles, and also a few updates as well. So, where to start? Well, why don't we start with Shout Select? Their first release is going to be, as we mentioned before, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. This one is going to be coming out on August 16th. And so the final list of extras for this, we've got a new 2-hour retrospective documentary entitled Into the Eighth Dimension and includes brand new interviews with the cast and the crew. Wow. New audio commentary with Michael and Denise Okuda. Plus, we got an audio commentary with director W.D. Richter and writer Earl Mac Rauch. Buckaroo Banzai Declassified Featurette. Some deleted scenes, including the alternate opening with Jamie Lee Curtis. new jet car trailer, and a theatrical trailer. So, Buckaroo Banzai, Blu-ray, August 16th. Now we're moving on to Scream...
Sweet.
Now we're moving on to Scream Factory. This is where things are going to get good. And we've got a couple of updates on titles that were announced earlier. The first one is going to be Session 9. This one's also coming out on August 16th. And the bonus features are Return to Danvers, The Seekers of Session 9, featuring interviews with director, co-writer Brad Anderson, actor, co-writer Steven Gavedon. Hope I said that one right. If I didn't, apologies. Actors Josh Lucas, Brendan Sexton III, Larry Fessenden, composers The Climax Golden Twins, and director of photography Uta Breswitz. Plus, we got a new episode of Horror's Hallowed Grounds, revisiting the locations of Session 9, an audio commentary with Brad Anderson and Steven Gavedon, deleted scenes and alternate ending with optional commentary by director Brad Anderson, story-to-screen featurette, the Haunted Palace featurette, and a theatrical trailer. And next up is going to be Hell Hall, which is coming out the 26th of this month. And this one only has a couple of bonus features. There's a new interview with actress Mary Warnoff and the original theatrical trailer. So that's kind of it for Hell Hall. I was hoping that there would be a little bit more to this, considering what this title went
through. Well, I think with... Well, I think with all, we're just lucky to even be getting it with everything they've gone through, I guess, at this point.
Right. Yeah, I'll take what I can get. So that's it for those two, and we're going to be moving on. Now here's where it gets really, really good. Scream Factory and NECA, the toy company NECA, are teaming up for a deluxe limited edition of Child's Play. This one is going to have a lot of features on it. We're going to get a 2K scan of the inner positive, a new audio commentary with director Tom Holland, plus the audio commentary with Alex Vincent, Catherine Hicks, and Chucky designer Kevin Yeager, audio commentary with producer Dave Kirshner and screenwriter Don Mancini. We've got select scene Chucky commentaries. Evil Comes in Small Packages. This one features interviews with Don Mancini, David Kirshner, John Lafia, Chris Sarandon, Brad Dourif, Catherine Hicks, Alex Vincent, and Kevin Yeager. Chucky Building a Nightmare featuring Kevin Yeager. A Monster Convention featuring Catherine Hicks, Alex Vincent, and Chris Sarandon. Introducing Chucky, The Making of Child's Play, a vintage featurette that's going to be about 6 minutes. The Decade of Darkness. This is the featurette on 80s horror films, which I believe is also on the Return of the Living Dead Collector's Edition. And we also have original theatrical trailer, still photo galleries, and it's going to have a reversible wrap with the new art, of course. And this is also going to be one of those offers where you can get the regular Collector's Edition, but if you get the deluxe offer, you get the extra poster, the extra art on the extra slipcase, but they're also going to be including a 5.5-inch Good Guys Chucky doll created by NECA, and it's housed in a Good Guys box. So this one comes out on October 18th, and as of right now, I don't know how many copies of this are still left.
I don't think they're selling like gangbusters because it's about $70. It's pretty expensive. Like, I was going to get it, and then after shipping and everything and tax, it was going to be 70-something bucks or whatever, and I was just like, you know what? You know, the doll's cool and all, the little 5-inch doll, but it was just like, for me, it was a chunk of change for that. So I was like, well, because I never do the deluxe ones because I don't need an extra slipcase, and I don't really need posters. I don't, you know, collect posters, so I don't need those. But normally those are about the same price, maybe like $10 more, and so that I can swing if I wanted to. But this thing is like, it's a bit pricey. So I don't think it's going to sell out as quick as the other things. But you never know. But I mean, it's a cool package.
It is. But, but still, I mean, it's close to $70. I mean, that's still, I mean, as much as I love Bill and Ted, I just couldn't pull the trigger on that because it was, you know, it was $80. You know, I'm just, just happy with the movies. That's all I have to say about that. But
totally.
I did, however, pull the trigger on the deluxe limited edition of the next title we have, 1976's Carrie. The collector's edition has got, it's got some good stuff. There's a 4K scan of the original negative. There's new interviews with writer Lawrence D. Cohen, editor Paul Hirsch, actors Piper Laurie, PJ Souls, Nancy Allen, Betty Buckley, William Catt, Edie McClurg, casting director Harriet B. Helberg, and director of photography Mario Tosi. And we got another new episode of Horror's Hallowed Grounds. This time we're revisiting the original locations of Carrie. Plus, you've got all the bonus features from previous editions, like acting Carrie, interviews with Sissy Spacek, Amy Irving, etc. Visualizing Carrie, interviews with Brian De Palma, Jack Fisk, Lawrence Cohen, and Paul Hirsch. A look at Carrie the Musical, theatrical trailers, a franchise trailer gallery, TV spots, radio spots, still gallery, and Stephen King and the Evolution of Carrie.
Nice.
That's a text gallery.
Oh, okay.
So once again, this one comes out on October 11th.
And you said their deluxe edition is sold out, right?
Yeah, it's completely sold out.
Okay, that's fine. Like the Blu-ray has all the bells and whistles on the disc itself. So.
Yep.
Cool. Okay.
All right, we got a bombshell of a Screen Factory announcement. Exorcist 3 is coming to Blu-ray, and there's going to be a director's cut.
Nice.
This one is coming out on October 25th. Also, right in time for Halloween. And this is going to be interesting. And this is a title that a lot of people have been curious about. You know, after, you know, Nightbreed came out, a lot of people were wondering if any other Morgan Creek horror movies were going to come out via Scream Factory. So we're getting Bad Moon, and of course The Crush came out earlier, but people were still wondering, what about Exorcist 3? Well, we're going to get it. It's going to be a two-disc collector's edition, and the extras, of which there are a ton of, are underway and will be announced at a later date in late summer or early fall. So stay tuned. We're going to have more details about that. And the director's cut, it's going to be called from a lot of sources. So it's going to – the quality will probably vary. Just to get an idea of what Blatty had in store for this movie, I'm still curious no matter what. This is definitely high on my list.
Awesome.
So that was all the news that was trickling in throughout the vacation, but – you know what? As soon as we came back from vacation, we got flooded with even more news.
Yep.
And I want to start with Arrow. Arrow has just announced part of its October slate. They've announced their UK-only releases, and they're pretty much movies we already have here in the States. The first one is 52 Pickup, which Kino Lorber issued last year. That's coming out in the UK on October 17th. You guys are going to be getting a high-definition Blu-ray and standard def DVD. It's going to be dual format. Original stereo 2.0 audio, optional subtitles, an audio commentary by critics Glenn Kenny and Doug Broad. A guide to the many cameo appearances by pornographic actors in 52 Pickup, theatrical trailer, and a reversible sleeve. And next up is going to be Burnt Offerings. This is going to be the debut on Blu-ray for Burnt Offerings in the UK. Dual format, original uncompressed PCM mono audio, optional English subtitles, audio commentary by film historian Richard Harlan Smith, acting his face, an interview with actor Anthony James. Nice. Blood Ties, an interview with actor Lee Montgomery. From the Ashes, an interview with screenwriter William F. Nolan. Portrait of Fear, an animated gallery of promotional materials and behind-the-scenes stills. Theatrical trailer, and this one will also have a reversible sleeve. And last but not least, The Burning. UK is getting The Burning on Blu-ray, and it's going to be in a limited edition steelbook packaging, and that's going to be limited to 4,000 copies. It's going to be dual format, original mono, optional English subtitles, audio commentary with director Tony Malam and critic Alan Jones, audio commentary with stars Shelley Bruce and Bonnie Dorosky, a brand new audio commentary with The Hysteria Continues, Blood and Fire Memories, detailed look at the creation of the film's makeup effects with special effects artist Tom Savini, Slash and Cut, an interview with editor Jack Shoulder, Cropsey Speaks, an interview with actor Lou David, Summer Camp Nightmare, an interview with actress Lee Ayers, brand new interview with composer Rick Wakeman, behind the scenes footage, theatrical trailer, makeup effects still gallery, and a poster in still gallery. Now, as far as anything else coming to the U.S. in October, we'll have to wait and see because, according to them, they just need a little bit more time because they're going to be their biggest releases ever. So we should be hearing an announcement about those maybe sometime next week. So that's what you guys in the U.K. are getting.
Biggest release ever. That's or biggest releases ever. That's crazy because they've had some. It's been a pretty goddamn good year for them. Side note,
I'll say.
Make sure you check out Screamcast episode number 30, our episode on The Burning, where Brad was drunk as fuck.
You know what? I don't think I even heard that episode. I might have to check that out then.
Yep. And some of these may be, I'm not sure if they're all on our iTunes feed or not, but if you go to screamcast.com/podcast, you can search it from there, or just use a search bar and type in The Burning and you'll find it. But yeah, it's a good one. Brad may have a different, may think differently, but I think it's awesome.
Moving on, we've got a little bit of a peek at our sponsor, Vinegar Syndrome's August slate. And the titles for that month are going to be Rudy Ray Moore's The Disco Godfather. We've got Evils of the Night, Taboo, Sex in the Comics, and Body Girls, which is going to be paired up with another feature, which we don't have just yet. But as soon as we get all the details on all of the titles, we'll go ahead and talk a little bit more about that. But I figure you guys might want a little sneak peek at what Vinegar Syndrome's got on the way. And it looks like some good stuff.
Hell yeah.
And last but not least, we got some last-minute news for you folks. This morning, a new episode dropped of the Shockwaves podcast. And they had on David Gregory from Severn. And he just let the cat out of the bag that they've acquired the rights to Kathy's Curse, and he said that there is going to be a Blu-ray of that forthcoming. We don't have any other details other than that, but just to let you guys know that that movie is going to be coming out on Blu-ray courtesy of Severn.
Wow. And apparently a lot of people are excited about it. I've never seen this one, but a lot of people are super pumped that it's coming out. So
yeah, I wasn't familiar with this one either, but what was I going to say?
Very cool.
Yeah. I was doing a little bit of research on it. Apparently, it was a public domain title. It's been on a lot of packs, like 20 or 50, okay. 50 movies per box set and whatnot. I mean, you can find it on YouTube, but to get a Blu-ray of that, yeah, that's going to be fun. So cool. That's all the news that dropped during our vacation. So we are all caught up to speed.
Did we miss the limited run for Scream Factory?
The limited run for
the Death Stalker Up from the Devs. Did we talk about that?
Oh shit! No, we didn't.
All right.
Ah, damn it! See what I mean? So much news.
I know.
Yes. Speaking of Screen Factory, they just announced today that they are doing sort of like this limited run of a few titles that they just happen to have HD Masters for. So they are going to be putting out a double feature Blu-ray of Deathstalker and Deathstalker 2. And they're also going to be putting out Up from the Depths. Now, those movies are going to be coming out on August, those are planned for August 30th. And let me just pull up the bonus features for Deathstalker and Deathstalker 2, because that's the only title of this whole bunch. Oh,
yeah,
go ahead.
I think it's just a couple audio commentaries.
I think you're right about that. It's an audio Deathstalker is an audio commentary. And so is Deathstalker 2. Of course, Deathstalker 2, directed by Jim Warnowski. I mean, that's obviously the one that I'm going to be listening to.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be quite entertaining. But, Up From the Depths, it has just like a theatrical trailer and I think a still gallery. Nope, just TV and radio spots. Still Gallery is going to be included with Message from Space, which is coming out September 27th, along with Time Walker and The Velvet Vampire. So this is going to be interesting. But the downside of these, though, I mean, yeah, they're limited to 1,000. There's not a whole lot of bonus features on them, but I checked some of the prices on these, and it's like $27, and that's not even including the shipping and the tax and all that. So yeah. It kind of makes you wonder how fast or how not fast these are going to be selling.
Yeah, they're pulling kind of a Code Red or a Scorpion DVD, Scorpion releasing, you know, by just trying these types of titles out. Unfortunately, when you press lower quantities, your price point, the cost is it raises. So, you know, say, because I did some research on what it cost to press Blu-rays and stuff like that, because I was kind of turning my wheels on jumping into the game, and then it just got to be too much. But say you want like 1,000, your price point's gonna be, you know, I don't know, $5 a DVD. But if you press 2,000, your price point's gonna be like $2 a DVD or Blu-ray. Those numbers are just off the top of my head, but it's that, you know, that kind of a drastic change in cost. So it's like, you know, so it's like one of those things. It's like the best price point would be like $14.99 for some of these, or maybe $19.99. But
yeah,
since they're doing limited runs of 1,000, they obviously can't do that because they need to cover their own costs as well. They need to make a profit. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I already have Up From the Depths on DVD. I already have Deathstalker 1 and 2 on an awesome, like, 4-movie set with, like, Barbarian Queens and one other one. I love that set. They look great on DVD for what these are, these low budget type flicks.
Yeah.
So that's why it's, you know, it's going to be tough, because I got Barbarian Queens for like, I got that 4-pack for like $10. So 4 movies for $10. So it would be hard for me to, because I was going to get Deathstalker, and then I saw the price and I was like, ah, gosh, I don't know if I can, you know, upgrade, you know, for $30. But there's people that are excited about some of these. You know, they'll buy them. But yeah, 1,000 is going to be tough. It's definitely, they're trying something to do, try to hit the market that like Code Red and Scorpion is hitting. But no, those guys don't sell out of their Blu-rays either. Like, they have trouble turning, and they have to start at 1,000. If you go under 1,000, you're stuck to doing BDRs. So yeah, they don't want to do that. So they have to get 1,000. So it'll be interesting. You know, I don't know. It's cool to see that they're experimenting, I guess. But we'll probably all talk about this on our next show, since this was late in the game, and we're recording the news after we've already done the main podcast. A little bit of behind the scenes information.
Yeah, you know, after hearing all that, you know what? I'm just going to go for that 4-pack, because from that recommendation and all from you, I'd rather invest in that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, some of these other movies sound cool, and I don't know if they've had any of their releases, but, you know, it's just that price point, you know, it's tough. Like, right now, especially, I'm trying to budget even more, and $30 for a blind buy is tough.
Yeah.
And $30 for a movie I already own on DVD that I think looks fine just because of the low-budget nature of it. I'm like, well, I'm fine. I'm happy, totally happy with the DVD, so I'm not going to spend $30 to unload it, because I can't. You know, I can try to sell the DVD, but I'm going to get like $5 for it. You know what I mean? So it just doesn't make sense. So,
yep.
you know, I mean, it's getting expensive for collectors because all these companies are doing this. And, you know, a few years back, it was easy to start trying to collect, like, all the Code Reds or all the Scorpion releasings, or even when I started buying Scream Factory, I was like, oh, this is cool. I can kind of afford this. And then all of a sudden, it's just been ramping up with all these labels that, you know, collectors have to be a little more, we said they make better choices, you know, where we have to get more selective. So it'll be, you know, we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Yep. But for right now, we're all up. That's all the news we have.
There we go. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for keeping us informed.
It's good to keep all you guys informed, too. So I hope you like what's coming out soon. So start saving your money.
Yeah, yeah. If there's things you like, save up that cash for sure. If you got kids, you know, budget to feed your kids first, and then, you know,
yep,
and then buy the movies you want.
The movies are my kids. All right.
All right, Josh. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time.
See you guys next week.
To Vinegar Syndrome's package. I mean, let's take Vinegar Syndrome's package out. That's what I meant to say.
You want to do the Picarumas real quick?
Yeah, let's get these out of the way because I did not watch them.
No porno?
No porno for me.
Why not?
Because I'm not able to watch very many movies as it is right now anyway, because things are so busy. So I got to things I needed to. And I just don't get into the porno. I wanted to at least take a peek at these, and you know, really quickly. But I just didn't get the time. And then we went on vacation, and you know, I can't bring these with me in the RV with the whole family.
You could have it. Just wouldn't have very well.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, for me, I mean, you know, I'm just. You know, I wanted to get to the Blu-rays for sure, but I don't know. The porno is just not for me, man.
I highly recommend Physical Attraction.
Dude, Physical Attraction is the shit.
It is so a pretty fantastic good. Picture, though.
So goddamn good.
Oh my
good.
God, dude. The plot of the movie is she's basically a hooker trying to make it into the fucking Olympics.
And there's nothing that says that she can't.
Not at
dude,
all.
Dude, it is fucking, like, that, it was funny to me because it was just so goofy and off the wall. But Physical Attraction's definitely the highlight of the four.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, there isn't much to go on other than kind of just the silliness that, you know, is around the movie and her trying to, you know, deal with her, her pimp. And then, you know, basically wanting to train and become, well, actually, it's the coach that actually wants her to be in the Olympics, right? Is that how it works? I don't remember. There's a lot of dick, too. But anyways, he basically trains her in more than one way to actually become in almost a Special Olympics. But, yeah, the Olympics. And then... BJ, do you want to say anything else about it? I mean, because that's pretty much it. I mean,
there's really not much to say more than it feels like all of those inspirational ABC, like, you can do it specials, but with fucking, so.
Yeah, well, <that's... laughs> both of these movies, Physical Attraction and then,
Classic Romance.
Yeah, Classical. It was
Classical
yeah,
Romance.
Yeah, Classical Romance by the same director, but they both have this, like, I don't know, like sex comedy drama vibe. Like,
That's what makes Vinegar Syndrome stuff so great. Like, the things they select aren't just, you know, bump and uglies and leave. Like, there's actually plot, and they're trying to do something in addition to the sex. So, I mean, I know that it's not much for you, Sean, but I really think that if you watch them as and take out the idea of, oh, this is pornography out of your head, I think that you would really enjoy some of the stuff they put out.
Well, that's what I've done with the past ones I've watched. I actually end up I'm fast forwarding through all the sex, which is hilarious to me. But just to see what the plot is about, you know.
Yeah, because I don't have much to say about classical romance and physical attractions kind of covered, but I am a huge fan of Tijuana Blue. Like, that's on the second disc.
Yeah. These movies are a different caliber. Harlot and Tijuana Blue are actually, like, more or less sexploitation with, you know, with some penetration.
Of actual penetration, yeah. It's insane. It has, you know, incredible commentary on women's rights and, you know, your right to choose. And that's fucking crazy because there aren't films that are non-pornographic that are willing to talk about that subject. But here we have, you know, an adult film that's willing to talk about, you know, how difficult it can be for, you know, people who get pregnant and don't want it anymore. So I really like Tijuana Blue. And then Harlot is, you know, very much about, you know, sexual openness and, you know, kind of discovering what you like sexually, which is another thing that I think the reason that this one's so interesting is because while obviously it's pornographic, so it's going to be presented in more of a male gaze, like there's something really empowering about her sexual, you know, exploration. It doesn't feel quite as, I don't know. It doesn't feel quite as exploitative.
Feel like, a porno. Like when the porno actually happens, it's almost, I don't know. It is very much more a sexploitation film. So when the sex actually happens, it's a little jarring.
But the intention behind it isn't like, and now it's time for fuck town. Like it doesn't, it feels very, I don't know. It feels very fitting for the world that it's in. I don't know. It's hard to defend.
Artsy.
Yeah. It's very artsy odd looking film, but it's, I don't know. I really recommend them. The two different, you know, DVDs that you'll get between the Picaramas are very, very different. But I think that it's, if you're new to Vinegar Syndrome, especially with their porn, you know, restorations, I think this is a good place to start because it gives you kind of the wide range of kind of the artsy fartsy porno and the, you know, super cheesy ones.
Yeah.
So,
because physical attraction and classical romance are definitely your cheesy pornos, but they kind of have this 80s sex comedy vibe. Like I'm watching it and like, I'm thinking like just one of the guys and, one of my favorite sex comedies called Give Me an F, and that's kind of what it felt like. Also, even like things of like elements of like Perfect with Jamie Lee Curtis and John Travolta. I don't know. I don't know. That's kind of the vibes that I was getting through that. Harlot and Tijuana Blue is very much like some of their other titles, like kind of like how artsy and empowering they are. It's like, I mentioned The Telephone Book countless times on the show. You know, and something like even some of the Wakefield Pool flicks. I don't know.
Yeah. And yeah.
Also, like,
I can get behind that.
Yeah. Like, just kind of, it's totally a different take. It is, like, I think, see, Sean, when you're supposed to watch them, like, this, like, you watch the stuff that's just, like, Trashy Lady, which is just a straight up porno, but, like, you know, comparing these four flicks, which one set is by one director, the other set, because they're by the same directors separate directors for each disc, but they did both movies. But yeah, Harlot and Tijuana Blue is like right up to what I'm talking about that is special about some of the hardcore vintage pornography. But almost they're just adult films. I can't even say that Tijuana Blue and Harlot are pornos because it doesn't feel like that. It feels like it's something else just with penetration. But anyways, that's my personal take on the film. Most people say, well, those are just adult films. And it's like, they're a little bit more than that. Like they're trying to be something a little bit more than just a TNA flick to make some money off of like 42nd Street.
Exactly.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So anyways, but that's, I mean, that's pretty much the batch. I mean, they're straight and to the point. It's just kind of refreshing to watch something that, I mean, it's basically like watching to, it's equivalent to watching a horror film that tries to do something new.
Yes.
Like that's absolutely what it feels like. It's like, this is the standard thing. This is the standard formula you follow, but you're doing this, this, and this different. And this makes you more unique than your normal slasher film. So anyways, okay, hopefully that sums it up.
Cool.
Yeah. Porn.
So moving along to their next two.
I wasn't trying to write these off completely. I was just, I ran out of time.
No, I know, but it's like, you really need to, I don't know, maybe we'll watch them in advance and let you know, hey, this is the shit that you need to check out.
Yeah, because, I think we can definitely start doing that.
Because that, even
because I need to kind of, just because I don't have time, I need to, you know, I need to basically make, I have, my to watch list is ridiculous. And
dude, Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls.
That's a yes, to watch.
1,000,000% Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls.
I mean, that's a straight up porno, but that is a fucking comedy, like through and through. That's,
I want a Hot
funny
and Saucy Pizza Girls t-shirt so fucking badly. I've been begging them, James, Brandon, make me a Hot and Saucy Pizza Girl shirt, please.
Just make them, man. Make them. Bob Chin will fucking.
Is that on Exploitation TV? Yeah, it is. Exploitation TV.
Yeah.
TV.
Yeah.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah, if you guys don't have Exploitation TV, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah.
I'll add it. You know, that's on my little playlist here.
You're my playlist.
Or wish list or whatever.
You're my wish list.
Yeah.
No, you.
Yeah, it's really good. But honestly, like, if you had to watch one of these, like Physical Attraction and then Tijuana.
I think Physical Attraction might be more of his speed.
Yeah, Physical Attraction, and then if you got around to watching Tijuana Blue. I think those are kind of put Vinegar Syndrome in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So
very cool. All right, let's jump into Rudy Ray Moore.
Yeah,
is the Human Tornado,
dude. I said a tweet the other day, and I'm standing.
Dude,
by
I lost it. My shit, man. When you said
Rudy Ray Moore's biggest fan was Rudy Ray Moore.
Yes, that sums these movies up perfectly.
As soon, like, here's the thing: is like Rudy Ray Moore was a well-known. At the time, in the community, he was a well-known comedian, and he had the following, and then he made, he took one of his characters, which was Dolomite, and he made a movie out of it. And when that movie became successful, Rudy Ray Moore was like basically a god in that sense, and he could do anything he wanted. And he made movies about himself. With the credit sequence of the Human Tornado, that sums up exactly his attitude. Because when he's
like a passion project, or not passion project, but a
he just wants. He basically what it was is I could only you can feel it. You can feel it oozing through the screen of what they wanted. I mean, he's standing there looking at the camera, and then turns slowly, and he starts to smile. He starts to smile because on the back of his fucking cape says Dolomite, Rudy Ray Moore, Dolomite, and the credits roll, and then it jumps into like 10 minutes of his stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Being Rudy Ray Moore, and then gets into the Human Tornado. It's basically, it's like almost like he's like small little documentaries of his life that are blown up out of proportion. Or like it's – when this is completely off topic, but it will, there's a comeback to it or a callback, whatever you call it. So I was watching an interview with Robert Rodriguez, years ago when he made Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
And I will defend that movie to its death, by the way, continue.
And, basically the interview process is like, you know, what do you do to, you know, create this. And he's like, well, you know, he actually consulted his son, and he would talk about his son's like, you know, inspirations and the dreams that he had that night and things that he wanted to see. And he just took basically and almost made a movie that was practically written and thought about by his kid. Same thing happens with Rudy Ray Moore. It's like Rudy Ray Moore has those like, hey, I want to watch a movie where I do stand up. And then a bunch of white people are trying to kill me. For no ungodly reason, you have no idea. It's like, look at those black, look at those niggers up on the hill, let's kill them. And it's like, what is happening? You know, like the fucking,
oh, yeah, those,
like that. It just happens. Like the guy like walks into like the sheriff's department and the sheriff pulls out his gun and just fires because he's scared. And then they go up there and basically, you know, then Rudy Ray Moore's banging the sheriff's like wife. Right. And then it, dude, he shoots her in the face with a shotgun. Mm-hmm. Like, what is happening? And then he like jumps off the cliff and he's like, y'all motherfuckers didn't know that Rudy Ray Dolomite could jump. Huh? Well, here's one. And it's just an instant replay back and forth watching his dick dangle in the air. And like, I don't know, man. It's just like, it's so much fun though, because he's making movies for himself. And for like his very like his target audience, which isn't the world, it's just his small following.
Yeah, I keep saying passion project, but it was more of like what's the word? What's that word I'm thinking of?
Ego. No, I don't think it's ego or anything.
I had it this morning that I was gonna say, and I can't remember it now.
I mean, it's just,
I gotta write shit down.
I mean, he's making movies about himself, for his fans. But that's the whole, like,
that's kind of the whole Dolomite.
Yeah,
thing, but it's though. The whole blaxploitation thing,
right?
Like the blaxploitation thing was making, you know, black filmmakers making black movies for black people. That's just how it was, and that's exactly what Human Tornado is. But just in a different sense and kind of consolidating down to just Rudy Ray Moore.
He's even more, correct. Yeah, even yes. More of a target audience than just.
Yeah, it was kind of like a little niche in that type of thing. It's like, oh, Rudy Ray Moore is making. I mean, it's the same thing as kind of how, you know, Superfly kind of had its own thing. It kind of blew up, even though there wasn't many films with a reoccurring character other than Return of Superfly, kind of like in the 80s. But, I mean, it kind of had that. It sets that presence of like, this is the character that you're going to follow and kind of emulate and stuff like that. But also at the same time, be kind of a promotional thing for his stand-up.
Yeah.
Because he's literally doing stand-up there, because there's that whole scene in Dolomite where he's standing at like in the parking lot and he just – they're like, Dolomite, start telling jokes. And he just fucking rambles on for literally, dude, that scene's got to be 15 to 20 minutes long of him just telling jokes. And this kind of the same thing happens in Human Tornado. But I cracked up when he said the guy was like on his wife and like finished like in 2 minutes and then said, you need to fix me some dinner. And she brought him a head of lettuce and some carrots. And he said, what the fuck is this? And she said, if you're going to fuck like a rabbit, you might as well eat like one. I fucking laughed. I thought that shit was funny. But I really like Human Tornado. Fucking Ernie Hudson's breakout fucking role. Ernie Hudson's very first movie. He's in Human Tornado. And I'm really glad because they're Vinegar Syndrome's releasing all these Rudy Ray Moore movies. So they're just going down the list. I think there's like 4 or 5 total where he plays the reoccurring character of Dolomite. But I mean, it's just him doing his own thing. And it's basically the first thing that comes. That's what it feels like. It's like, Dolomite, what do you want to do today? Well, I want to run through the desert and then shoot a car with a shotgun and blow up. And it's like, all right, let's do it. And they do it. That's the coolest thing. And that's why I like the films, because it almost is kind of a DIY aspect too, where there wasn't producers telling them what to do, or you have to do this to please your black audience. Like, these guys knew exactly what their audience would like. They don't have to refer to fucking a producer sitting in a big office that, you know, watches movies and only wants to watch kind of a John Peters thing where he's like, I want this, this, and this in this movie because that's what I want to see. No, they fucking threw everything like out of the way. That's why independent cinema still kicks ass today.
Yeah.
That's the reason why blaxploitation kicked ass, because they didn't have to answer to anybody, and they can do and get away with whatever they want.
Have you mentioned the title sequence? The beginning title sequence?
Like
a different
font. That was the first thing he said.
Okay.
Yeah, and he spins around and has that smirk on his face, and then it's like
it goes on forever, I feel like. It's like one of the longest opening titles.
Because he pulls out these glass things in the ground sticking out, and then he slashes them with a fucking katana.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It's Rudy Ray Moore doing what he wants. He's basically that's the coolest part, because watching these movies, you enjoy on one level, but on a level for me, I'm thinking during the making of this film, how did they come up with that idea? And if obviously Rudy Ray Moore is saying, hey, can we stick some glass in the ground and I cut it with a katana? And they're like, yeah. He's like, all right, cool. That's what it feels like. That's how easy these scenes were set up. And it's just that's why I like, because I think Passion Project isn't the wrong terminology to use on something like this, because it is him doing a movie for himself. But he knows who it's going to, impact and grab.
Yeah.
And even if it is a small audience of 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 people, it doesn't matter. You know, that's what I like about these films. That's why they're so fun. So, but anyways.
Man. You definitely have more to say about Human Terminator than I do, but.
Hey, I like Dolomite. I think it's a fun character. I'm a huge fan of blaxploitation cinema in general. And when you get to see a continuation of a character or a series, which isn't very prominent in blaxploitation, mainly you just see the same actors. But I think it's substantial when you have a reoccurring character like that in different movies, kind of doing the same thing and being successful at it. That means Rudy Ray Moore was doing something right for that time, in that time frame, for the people he's making the movies for. Because, I mean, you got to think that in 1976 and before that, even when he started, there was a lot of shit going on in the world. And instead of making a overly violent, black on white crime or white on black crime, fighting the man, being super serious, Dolomite put a whole new spin on things.
He made popcorn films,
Made the movies violent and he got his point across, but he made you laugh doing it.
Yeah.
So it's a different aspect, because I mean, we can talk about blaxploitation again. We fucking did four episodes on it. All those movies, other than the Dolomite movies we mentioned, all those movies are very by the book, and they were angry movies. They were movies to make, made to make a statement and to have a voice, rather than going out and having a loudspeaker and speaking out and then getting hit by cops or beaten up by white people. They were making movies and putting it in theaters and spreading the message. But, Dolomite did it in such a way, Rudy Ray Moore did it in such a way that made it comical and made it fun. And I don't know, it's just, I think it's super special because he also did this whole comedy spin, which there wasn't a lot of comedy blaxploitation films.
Yeah.
I think they're super special. I'm glad. Go ahead, Sean.
No, go ahead. I interrupted you.
Seriously, I'm done talking because I've been talking a little too much.
What I love about what Vinegar Syndrome is doing is they're doing these making of documentaries. They got I Dolomite Part 2 on here. And, I just love that they were able to get this stuff and have these things, interviews, with Rudy Ray Moore, because he passed away
in
2008. So it's great seeing.
God, how good would commentaries be with him? He would just talk about himself the whole entire time.
I know.
Be fucking solid gold.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a commentary on here, and there's the German dubbed version. Did you guys check that out at all?
I didn't
know, but
that.
I need to.
I did see it, and I was like so busy trying to watch a bunch of other shit for festivals, uh-huh. and I was just like, I'm definitely going back because, dude, I've seen Human Tornado. I own the big fucking Rudy Ray Moore box set mm-hmm. when it came out by Xenon, because that's where kind of these movies are coming from. I know that. It's weird because Vinegar Syndrome doesn't put their label on here. And I'm not sure how the rights work, but they're picking up all these Xenon titles. Xenon was a specific label for kind of underground blaxploitation films.
Yeah, it's in the fine print. This is under license from Xenon. That's about it.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, yeah, Xenon put out this huge box set of Rudy Ray Moore. His four or five movies, I forget how many. There's like the Disco Godfather's one of them, and there's one after that, maybe only four. And then like three discs of his stand-up. And it's basically his same routines that he puts in his movies. So I call it the Kevin James effect because Kevin James has done the same thing for like 20 years and gets away with it. He just takes his fucking stand-up and puts it in movies that he acts in. It's ridiculous.
A lot of comedians do that.
Some more than others.
Yeah. Some rely on it as a crutch more than others, for sure.
Well, basically, you could watch every. I used to watch it with my mom because she really liked the show. But you can watch all of Kevin Jane's stand up if you just watch King of Queens. But anyways, it's kind of the same thing with Rudy Ray Moore. He had, you know, his material was funny though. It got people laughing. And, you know, it's not for white people. Maybe white people don't laugh as much because it is to a certain, you know, it was a product.
The time and environment for sure.
Yeah. And that's what I love about it because it literally is no fucks are given.
Yep.
So,
BJ, do you have anything else to say about Human Tornado?
I don't have much to say more than, I mean, Brad kind of said everything that I would have said. I just kind of like letting him go.
Sorry.
No, I like the Dolomite character, and I think that you're right. The fact that he's with Human Tornado, he's kind of going into business for himself at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes it more enjoyable because you know that like every time he does a line, that's a good one. You know, you can see it in his face. He's like, yeah. "Damn, that was funny."
That's the best part.
And, like, it makes it so much better because it's. So visible.
Yeah,
check it out. It's it's so worth it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was just wondering what the fuck was going on. I'm watching it going like, what is this? Because it's even more wacky than Dolomite, like the first, you know.
Because he knew what he can get away with.
I mean, it is batshit and he just goes for it. The musical numbers and his stand up and, you know, but the more I have thought about it since I've seen it, you know, I understand the more I think about it, what it is. And, you know, these for what they are pretty fun. So I'll definitely, you know, sometimes there's some movies that are like one timers. Like this is something I can see myself putting in and watching, when I'm doing things or whatever, just for the sheer entertainment value of it. So,
you know, it's just funny with Rudy Ray Moore because I mean he has this character Dolomite, and even though he's not Dolomite in these other movies, it is this reoccurring character that he has that he puts in every movie as you know Petey Wheatstraw, you know, because I think that's the next. Is it the next Vinegar Syndrome title and then Disco Godfather?
I think so.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, so I think there's four. But even playing Petey Wheatstraw and then he played, God, what's his name in Disco Godfather? But anyways, it's the same fucking thing and it's so good. It's so good. Even though it's a different caliber of movie, but like, Rudy Ray Moore, he was, like I said, he's making movies for himself.
Yeah. Yeah, July, I don't think, they have Petey Wheatstraw is the one with Rudy Ray Moore. Then they're also doing the Candy Tangerine Man / Lady Coco. So two blaxploitations next month. or this month to look forward to. So good stuff, man. I was saying there was a while ago, I think I'd got Foxy Brown or something like that. And I was like, man, there needs to be more. I think it was when we were doing our getting ready, kind of researching stuff for our podcast on blaxploitation. And I was just like, man, there's not enough on Blu-ray. And then all of a sudden this year, like Vinegar Syndrome answered the call, man.
Well, they did. I mean, Olive put out all those titles. Yeah. They put out Hammer and Black Caesar came out. And then now Code Red's putting out, you know, some. They're putting out Death Journey. They put out the Black Gestapo. So, yeah, it's definitely catching on, which is super cool.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully more happens. I can't wait. I really, really hope that Vinegar Syndrome, I know James and Ryan and Brandon and whoever else is listening to this right now, please let me know if you're doing Penitentiary, because Penitentiary is fucking
Penitentiary?
Great, yes. There's actually, it's a trilogy, and I hope they do the trilogy. But yeah, dude, Penitentiary is fucking phenomenal.
I thought you were saying like Penetration Tentiary or something like that.
No, that's the you know, probably Digital Playground spinoff.
Awesome. Let's jump into this next Blu-ray that came out in May. Psychic Killer.
Dude, you should play that. You should play that like fucking Bells song that plays throughout the movie.
I'll try to track it down.
So,
this is starring Alda Ray. Graydon Clark. It says starring Graydon Clark. He's in it. He wrote it.
He plays the fucking cop.
Does he play the...
I think he plays the officer.
He's a cop, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not like a title role, I mean, or anything.
Hey, well, fucking Graydon Clark was on this show, bitch.
I know.
Boom.
So, this one, I was really excited to see. Apparently it was rated PG.
It was 1975. A lot of things were rated wrong.
Got away with so much. Kind of spilled into the 80s a little bit, and then the 90s ruined it all. With the PG.
I blame Nancy Reagan.
Yeah.
No, fuck Nancy Reagan.
Probably. But this one, man, I really, really like this flick. I mean, it's basically, it's a kind of a telekinesis psychic film, but... I think fucking, this is before, like, Carrie and before any of these other kind of telekinesis type films that came along in the late 70s. Was this one of the first ones to really do that?
Ah, dude, I don't know.
But anyway, it's about a guy played by Jim Hutton, and he basically gets some amulet or something from an inmate in prison. He's put in prison wrongly for a murder, and he gets given this amulet that apparently has special powers where he can basically get back at the people that put him in prison. And that's the basic setup for the flick. That
you're so good at doing synopsis.
I'm horrible at synopsis. And then, of course, the cops try to track down who's doing the killing. Brad, I'm sure you'll sum this up way better than me. But I dug it. I really had a fun time watching this.
We need to start out with the producer of the film, which is Mohammed Rustam.
Yes.
Who has done – I tweeted the other day about him. Like, I really wish this guy was – more prominent in making movies, because he had a span of of course he didn't produce that much, because the movies that he was producing were probably really fucking hard to get off the ground because of the content and how weird they were. Mohammed Rustam, who is known as Marty, basically Marty Rustam, is a producer that picked up some weird fucking movies. I mean, we talked about Evils of the Night, which, you know, has this segments from Evil Town, which Vinegar Syndrome has announced that Evils of the Night will be on Blu-ray by them, which is kind of odd because the, you know, Gorgon Video just released that. But I guess that they're working with Marty Rustam. So I'm hoping that a lot of these films hit, because Marty Rustam's actually on the special features, does a great interview, a new interview with them, and kind of goes through. But I mean, you had, you know, him doing Pets, which is a really fucking cool, movie. Code Red put that on DVD. So of course, Psychic Killer. He fucking produced, even though the movie is batshit, but this kind of explains it. Marty Rustin wrote Eaten Alive. So like, you know, you have, basically, you know, Neville Brand, Eaten Alive, Toby Hooper, directed, but, you know, watching Eaten Alive and then seeing Psychic Killer, that's pretty much sums up his career. And, you know, the same thing is, you know, Evils of the Night and, Please Don't Eat the Babies. Oh my God, dude, talk about a fucking kick-ass movie. But that's kind of what he was about. He wanted to take these odd scripts and odd stories and kind of go completely against the grain of what the 70s and 80s were doing. Like, he was putting even a newer spin on exploitation cinema. And that's kind of where Psychic Killer came about, because in the special features, which I didn't know, I learned this, Graydon Clark, one of Marty Rustin's very first movies was Dracula versus Frankenstein, which Graydon Clark wrote an original script of that, but it was changed so much over a period of time, Graydon Clark didn't get the credit because the script has, you know, obviously, you know, became something else. But that's where he met Marty, and he did it for a paycheck, basically, and hooked up with Marty and started, you know, helping him with movies and got together. And Marty Rustin was just a likable guy, you know. He wanted to do something new and creative, so he was looking for these types of movies. And coming across Psychic Killer, you know, this was, what, 1975, was it?
Yes.
And, 75, yeah. I have myself muted.
You know, a movie that's PG, I have no idea how they – I mean, I know we're talking about 75, but I honestly don't know how this movie got a PG rating, though.
So there's a nude right? The person's killed, right? The shower death scene?
Dude, what about the fucking guy in the meat grinder in the meat locker? Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Hey, violence never boosts – ratings. It's only about titties.
Yeah, but
yeah, there's nothing really sexual in it, so I guess that's why I got the PG. I don't know.
But I mean, we have a movie that where this guy is basically this astral projecting, which, you know, they talk about Insidious, huh? which is, you know, a thing. It's been in movies before, but you know, basically killing people. You know, that have basically fucked him over,
mm-hmm.
or have any kind of connection, and, you know, the cops are stumped. But it's really cool because Graydon Clark wrote this script off of a kind of a story that he heard and just a kind of a, you know, numerous things that he come in contact with psychiatrists and scientists and shit like that, and made this story. So, I mean, I think all around kind of what this movie is based on with was Rustum's like kind of grounds of saying, I want to make weird cinema. I want to take your script that's fucking weird and make it, you know. Eaten Alive isn't a movie where Toby Hooper was just doing drugs and making a movie. No, that's Marty Rustum, who actually co-wrote that movie. Making that, he probably wanted Toby Hooper to do more drugs and be more wild and do crazy things. And that's the cool thing that works with Psychic Killer. And you have a group of people with, you know, Aldo Ray worked with, you know, Rustum quite a bit. You know, you have a veteran, Julie Adams, who's been around for a while. It was in, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon. You know, you have almost a team of friends, making these, movies together. And I think that's the reason why it's so, Marty Rustum's movies that he produced, other than Evils of the Night, are so well made for as low budget and small as they are.
It's crazy, 'cause I'm looking up the director here, Ray Danton.
Yeah.
And he was like an actor in like the 60s. He was in The Longest Day.
Yeah.
And it was the 50s and 60s. He was mainly an actor and television actor. And then he got into directing here in the 70s, near the end of his acting career. And this is, I think, the only real kind of genre movie he directed, because then he went into a lot of television. He like did an episode of Incredible Hulk. I guess he did a movie called Death Master in 72, and then he did some new footage in Hannah, Queen of the Vampires. But Second Killer kind of marks his last kind of genre horror directorial effort, and he went into TV. But
he was an actor, but that's what I'm saying. It was a close-knit group of friends.
Right.
That's the reason why Graydon, you know, basically, hey, Graydon, you want to write a movie? Yeah, sure. Let's get our friends to star in it. So that's the reason why I think these movies were so well made, because if you look at this, like other movies that were made around this time and kind of, you know, the genre, the budget, kind of wanting to do something different, the movies are kind of a mess. You know, they're not well edited. They're not well directed. You know, the actors, they grab people, basically their friends that aren't actors, even though these people grab their friends, but they are actors. And the movie's kind of, you know, a jumbled mess, you know. But with this one, I watch it. I'm like, man, this is so fucking good. It's a cool story. It looks fantastic. You know, and Graydon Clark really knows how to turn on the crazy. Like, he's definitely always, like, taking things and, you know, pushing them just a little bit, you know, pushing them more and more. Everything from making blaxploitation films, because, you know, he made Tom, which Rustum also directed, Rustum produced, which is, you know, a blaxploitation film, you know. And then working basically right after that with this, I just think that's the reason why these movies are so cool. So basically the same thing with indie filmmakers today. We have a group of indie filmmakers that work so closely together that they're in each other's movies. They produce each other's movies. They do cameos in each other's movies. And that's the reason why. It's this like close-knit community that are making these movies, and they have so much support and help from others. So that's the reason why they're so solid. And the same thing can go for the 70s. That's the reason why Carpenter's films are fun. It's because he's making movies with his friends. And like going back, it's the same thing with this.
It's good stuff.
I'm going to chime in real quick because I know some people are going to be like, why haven't you said anything? So another Cleveland filmmaker, Mr. John Nix of Turnstile Films, has been dying to get me to watch this movie before the Blu-ray release. He had, you know, a shitty DVD copy or something, and he's been trying to get me to watch it, and I swore to him I would not watch it unless I watched it with him. So gotcha. That's why I was so quiet.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because I'm a woman of my word, and I'm not gonna do that.
Damn.
Did it at least buy the Blu-ray?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, because that DVD sucks. I had it too.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, so we'll watch the Blu-ray, and then I'm sure it'll be on my doorstep in a couple of weeks.
Nice. It looks fantastic. I really love. I mean, I can listen to Graydon Clark talk about making movies all day. So he's involved.
He
like
will
feature it. He will.
He will. He'll literally talk about movies.
Yeah, I know, and it's great. I mean, I want it. We got to get him on the show again. We got to find an excuse to get him back on. This would have been perfect.
You just probably say, "Hey, man, you want to talk about movies?" And he'll say, "Yeah."
Yeah, but some good stuff on here, man. Like, this is what I love. You know, I always movies like this that just come out of nowhere that I haven't heard of, and I love it when I enjoy them as much as you know as I do. And this is a really fun one. I think Jim Hutton does a great job. Like, I really, really liked him in this and how he portrayed the character. And it's good, man. It was very well done. So, I don't know. That's all I got to say about it, I guess.
Oh, wow.
But, very happy with this Blu-ray. This was my favorite of this batch. Wasn't the one movie that I can say, like, you know, they hit it out of the park with both, you know, with substance, with all the special features, and then how much I love the movie too. So,
I mean, it's exploitation at its finest.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So I'm really hoping that with this kind of deal with obviously Rustum, that they hopefully will be doing, they'll bring some of these other films to Blu-ray. So please do, also known as Island Fury, Please Don't Eat the Babies, which is fantastic. Like I said, fucking cannibal killers. You know, hopefully Pets, with that whole Code Red thing. They keep on picking up Code Red movies. Pets was another one that was, that's really, really good. That's out of print by, Code Red. So yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I think the May package is great. I mean, I love everything Vinegar Syndrome is doing. And even if I'm not 100% fan of some of the flicks that come out, you know, each month, like, this is, it's great what they're doing. And, you know, I'll never run, drag them through the mud. You know, they're doing the Lord's work. And, the cool thing is, like, even if you're not, like, you know, I'm not a fan of the porn as much, but, you know, like, there's always, I think there's something for everyone that likes exploitation film. And that's just great. And every month there's someone for everyone who loves these kinds of films.
Yeah. So they're restoring a lot of stuff that, you know, without them would be forgotten about.
Yeah.
Indefinitely.
Yep.
It's so great. And they're good people. I always like supporting companies that are composed of just genuinely good people.
Yep. Agreed. All right. We have some emails to read. We have 20 to read between the three of us. And then we're going to draw a winner for the Sean's Big Bucks of Porn contest.
Do we want to just go round robin? Just one person does one and then keep rotating?
We can do that. Are we good on time? BJ, you doing all right with
time? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. All right.
So, you know, I'm looking out for you. It's late for you guys right now when we're recording. And all right.
I'm still on LA time, baby.
All right. Let me go ahead and get mine here.
And if they have last names, we're not going to read last names.
First name, and then if they have a last name, last initial.
Perfect.
Cool. All right, this is you, Brad, and me.
Sure.
Okay.
All right, first one up is from Sam. Sam says, in high school, my older brother had kicked me out of the room we shared to make way for his girlfriend / newly married wife. Because of this, I then moved into this art room my parents had, so the room was being set up to a bedroom, and during the time of the story, the door didn't have a lock or a knob so anyone could go in. So one day I decide, I don't think anyone's really around, might as well masturbate. I get my laptop, we didn't have Wi-Fi, so I'm using shitty pictures of butts that I saved onto the computer in an empty room with a door that doesn't close. In the middle of it, my mom busts into the room. I immediately cover up and tell her, hey, don't just burst in here like that. She then proceeds to stand there, crestfallen, and begins to give me the speech. She tells me how porn is bad, how God doesn't like it, and how it will be bad for me when I have a relationship. 100% sincere in broken English because she's from Guatemala and never fully learned English. It was the worst. So I want to win this porn / smut so I can disappoint God, my mother, whatever future relationship I'm in, and not have to jerk it to JPEGs anymore.
Please don't jerk it to JPEGs anymore. We're way past that.
Correct. Buy some Vinegar Syndrome.
Oh, man. All right, Brad.
Can anything beat that story right now?
I don't know. I purposely haven't read mine, so.
Yeah, I haven't either, but oh, my God. Like, that that was fucking good. All right.
I've got some pretty good ones.
Okay. All right, Sam. Sam's my number one so far. Sam was great.
He set that bar pretty damn high.
Yeah, I mean, come on, people. All right, so this one is by Christian. That name sounds familiar. All right, so, hey guys, it might not be the funniest or best story ever told, but it's the only time I've ever been caught during, quote, sexy time, or at least the only time I remember, so here it goes. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, I must have been around 12 12 to 14, I think, a local channel was showing some NWA WCW wrestling sometime after midnight on Monday nights, which is a must watch for me every week. Having been a huge wrestling fan back then, before wrestling came on, however, they were showing an episode of Playboy Late Night. So little me thought, well, I'd be up anyway, so why not watch that as well, right? And of course, you know, sexy naked ladies aren't too shabby to look at either. And of course, how it has to be, one such Monday night, my dad came into my room and caught me watching Playboy Late Night. Being embarrassed, I immediately went to telling him that I was waiting for wrestling and I was, and that it was late this week and whatnot. Should have told him I was only watching it for the articles. All in all, it wasn't the big of a deal and didn't scar me for life or anything. Sure, it was awkward and I felt like I was doing something wrong at the time, but I got over it pretty quick and kept on watching the probably greatest double feature ever on Monday night, each and every week. Ah, Christian, that's good too. I'm making a good list now because that was good too.
We're keeping track of the ones that make us laugh the most, FYI, for possibly a bonus round.
A bonus gift.
Yep.
A bone around.
A bone around. All right.
I'm a little disappointed. There were no female entries to my knowledge.
I don't think there were. So, and I think it's, you know, I'm noticing a trend, but
we can end it because we did get more than five. So I have to tell my story, but I'll do that last.
All right. This first one that I have, all it says is my contest entry. So Alfred G, you're disqualified.
Oh boy.
What?
That was really aggressive.
You didn't follow the rules. All it says is my contest entry. That's all he wrote.
Oh, he's just one of those people that probably saw the post. Oh, whatever.
Disqualified motherfucker. So I'm going to move on.
Come on.
I was
going to
say, that better not be your reading.
That's it.
Like, that's literally all he does is my contest entry.
That's all he wrote.
So, AKA, I saw Vinegar Syndrome fucking tweeted out and I responded just through the link without actually reading to listen to the episode for the
post. Yes.
Come on, dude. Don't be that guy.
Oh, he was the only guy like that.
Well, whatever. He's that guy, and we're forgetting about him and moving on.
Moving on. Right.
BJ. You don't even get on the bad list, dude. You don't even get on the list at all because you probably don't listen to the show anyway, so whatever. All right. Go ahead, BJ.
All right. This one is from Charles K. This one's pretty good. I read this one already. When I was about 12 or 13 years old, I had borrowed a porn VHS tape, which I would usually watch early in the morning to take care of my morning wood problems.
Dang!
The VHS tape was the 1993 classic Lady in Spain by Steve Perry. He included the IMDb link.
Nice. Shit, Sean would love that shit.
I had decided on this particular morning to watch the film with headphones because I actually wanted to hear some of the dialogue. Yes, I know.
Fucking
classy.
I
use headphones too. You gotta use headphones, man. Unbeknownst to me, my sister and two of her best friends had gathered at my door and were now being entertained by the unfortunate circumstance they had caught me under. Needless to say, I eventually turned around and, in much chagrin, tried to laugh the matter off, but the damage was done. And the particular scene they had caught me viewing was perhaps the most graphic, as the particular actress, Rosanna Melendez, had just received two cum shots to the face, glazing her like a donut.
Glazing her like a donut?
Jesus Christ.
This one may have been like one of the better written ones that was said. May not be the
what
funniest.
What was this dude's name?
Charles. Charles K.
Charles K. And my book is getting some pluses.
Oh, man. Glazing her like a donut.
Oh,
That's some wordsmithing.
All right. Let me get to my next email here. All right. Eric. Okay. His name's Eric. And his subject is Vin Sin Giveaway. So at least he knows who Vinegar Syndrome is because he's using that lingo.
Yeah. All right,
so message. So not watching porn. What? All right, so this is our...
Not about him, does he mean that?
So not watching porn, but shortly after moving into my house with my brother, he was showing the house to some of his friends, and they were looking around my room. I had a bag of porn DVD cases in my closet, and the wife of the couple peeked into the bed and looked at me real quick, and then we all left the room. That's it.
We got Eric, some people not trying.
Eric, I get your story, but I'm gonna put you on the other side of this
thing. All right, Sean.
Hold on, I need to write down these disqualifiers here.
No, don't disqualify.
That's not disqualifying.
I have another one. I didn't read these. This is when Vinegar Syndrome retweeted us. All it says is, I really would like to win the box from Vinegar. God damn it,
Peter. Can you just mail him an actual box of vinegar?
I'm going to email him and say that he's won and send him a box of vinegar.
What was this dude's name?
Merle.
Dude, he wanted vinegar soup.
Alfred and Merle, you guys have been disqualified. You'll never hear this anyway. God damn, I was hoping to have some good things to read, but so far I've struck out. Merle needs himself some vinegar.
Oh, shit. All right, PJ, go.
I better check the rest of these and see if I have any shit.
No. Don't. This is good.
Fuck. I have all a bad right. feeling about the rest of mine.
All right, let's do it. BJ, unmute yourself.
Thank you. All right, so I have a short one. This is from Anthony. I fell asleep, quote-unquote, working out to Sex World. My sister came over to my apartment and found me with just as I fell asleep with the disc on continuous play. Awkward.
Yeah.
That is the worst.
Why does his sister have a key to his apartment? That's what I want to know.
And this is recently because he's watching Sex World.
Yeah. Hey, I don't judge people's lives.
No. What was this guy's name?
Anthony.
All right, Anthony, you go on the good side. All right, so this is Patrick. Vinegar Syndrome Smut Contest. Message my story. When I was a teen, I utilized a website that was an early YouPorn, except it was mostly JPEG images and really poorly shot videos. The site was also sectioned off with a sidebar with a list of what they had to offer. Well, my sister liked to come into my room without knocking. She did this because she knew it annoyed me. I should note that when I had a lock on my door, it was easily opened with a bobby pin. One day, I was minding my business, browsing, and sure enough, I hear the sound of a doorknob. He meant to put jiggling. He put giggling. Doorknob.
Doorknob giggling.
I knew what that meant and clicked out of the window, or so I thought. Door comes open. I hear, "Hey, Pat, what are you doing?" Remember how I said I thought I had closed the window? Well, I didn't. I tried exiting the browser as I was turning around to face the door. I didn't exit. I just clicked into a new category. Hentai. My sister goes into my room to be greeted by me in a screen filled with naked cartoon women. She didn't say anything about it, but coincidentally, my mom started insisting on seeing my internet history periodically until I was 16.
Damn.
All right, Patrick, you go on the good list.
Oh, that hentai, man. That's I had a roommate who was really into hentai. He's the one with, like, the tentacle one, too. The tentacle
Tentacle hentai.
Dear God almighty.
All right, Sean.
All right, Matt T.
Matty?
Thanks for releasing films on Blu-ray.
How did you end up with all of the fucked up ones?
Because I just, you know, I sectioned them off and emailed you guys, you know, in order, you know. Just this is when Vinegar Syndrome retweeted us. So we got all these.
Jesus Christ.
That one doesn't work.
I'm not even writing down your name, Matt T.
Well, I got to write it down because if I pull out their name, I'm throwing that shit away.
Pull it out and then be like, fuck this. And then we draw another one.
Totally.
All right. So I got Joey H. I think the most embarrassed I've ever been while watching porno was actually from successfully identifying the weird house from David DeCoteau's A Talking Cat in an adult film. Watching a woman get her asshole licked and then recognizing the Volkswagen car bench and the dead tree wearing boots in the background from a terrible children's movie about a magical cat I watched alone as a childless adult man really brought in an endless wave of self-loathing I wasn't prepared for. I finished the jerk sesh, though.
way to go, yo. Way to go the extra mile.
Joey.
Push it to the limit.
Joey.
That was good.
All right.
Two stars next to your name, Joey.
Now, this is one of our listeners, hardcore listeners. I think he's actually won something before.
Yes, we should just disqualify him right now. Sorry.
No, this is the trucker guy we don't want to fuck with.
Oh, yeah, Steve, never mind.
All right, Steve,
don't come to our house and beat my face to a pulp.
Steve says, here goes screencast. I spent the summer of 1998 at my aunt's house in Gainesville, Florida. No kids, just she, her husband, and I. My aunt is my favorite person in the world, and I'm thankful, oh so thankful, that it wasn't her that caught me. They had a television out in their furnished garage area, and one night I needed to watch my Atlanta Falcons play some football against some hated team. The Falcons were up, and I got bored. I think right there that already has me laughing. And this dude wrote a fucking like novel. Most people throughout my life had called me Big Steve or Tall Steve, and that night Little Steve said to me, "What the hell? We're winning." I didn't have any arguments I could think of. And so so happened that I knew exactly where Uncle Richard hid his filthy box of blank supplies, and it was right there in that garage. Both Big and Little Steves were having a special moment with the exceptionally curvy blonde when it hit me. Richard's beer fridge is out here, and here's a big fan of that cold bubbly.
He's a big fan?
Yeah, Richard's beer fridge. That's his uncle.
Right, okay.
I stood and reached for the VCR, and in that exact moment, my aunt's husband needed a thirst quencher. In hindsight, removing the tube sock should have been step one, but I was in a panic. I stood there with my back to the television, and Little Steve and I stood facing the room as he walked right on by. Didn't say a word. He went and got his beer and headed towards the door. I felt like I had something. I felt like I had to, I guess he meant say something. But what? I just tried not to make eye contact. I tried blocking what was on the TV with my back as I stood, but the blonde was getting railed more than decently, and I knew Richard had heard her voice before. He hesitated at the door for a moment and started to walk out when I blurted, because it was itchy.
Oh my god.
I went with the jock itch, people. I could hear them laughing for the entire second half of the game. I waited for them to go to sleep before I dared set foot back in the house. I went grocery shopping the next day with my aunt and prayed that she wouldn't bring it up. She didn't say anything, not a word. But when she did do what she did do was put some jock itch cream in the basket right on top, right where I'd see it. She bought it and put it in the bathroom. Every day I'd put it under the sink and throw it away, and every next day there it was, back on the sink. Almost 20 years later, and she still gives me shit about it. She gave me some as a Christmas gift one time, too. Spending time with her is embarrassing every time, and she knows it. But hey, at least my Falcons won.
Oh my god.
Dude, Steve, that is awesome.
That's incredible.
You just got 4 stars, Steve, on my little list here of the laugh meter.
Yeah, that's a good one, man.
Holy moly. Okay.
All right, Sean. Reach your bullshit.
Damn it.
Is it another bullshit?
Darian O says, not much of a story, but I've only been caught once. I was watching computer porn and my dad walked in.
Computer porn?
Darian, I feel like you're one of those students in high school that barely made it through with maybe C's.
There's no reason to be mean.
Because technically he's not wrong. That is all we asked for.
Okay, you stay in the drawing, Darian, but next time, I want a little more effort.
But no, Darren, you need to fucking email, what the fuck is computer porn?
Computer porn? A bunch of people fucking computers. Wasn't there a movie about a guy
just
who
trying to jam it in their floppy disk drive?
Wasn't there a movie about a guy who fucks his computer?
Tron.
No. It was with the dude who was in that. He was in that movie where the kids.
Weird Science.
The kids saw. He's in. There's a TV series.
War Games.
Fuck. Never mind.
Flight of
Reaper. He was the sidekick in Reaper.
He was a raper.
There's a movie called. There's a TV show called Reaper. About a kid who made a deal with the devil and he had to...
The fuck his computer?
Or his... No. God damn it. There's his bumbly friend.
Darren, do you see what you've done?
Who I swear was in a movie about him having a relationship with his computer and he literally fucks his computer.
Take Darren out of the fucking contest because he derailed this fucking segment.
Darren, you ruined it. All right, Darren, you stay in the contest, but like I said, next time, let's go above a C-level effort.
And what the fuck is computer porn, bro?
And what's computer porn? Send us a follow-up, please, Darian.
I mean, I'm sure that it's porn you watch on the computer, but...
I know. Darian, we're giving you shit.
Hey, when you say computer porn, I think of two computers fucking.
All right.
All right. So this one is going to be really nice to read because... Instead of using a space bar, they just used period.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I'm assuming English isn't their first language on this one. I don't think so.
Not at all.
Well, let's not make fun of that because it's some people.
What, I'm the dick?
Yeah.
I'm the asshole?
No, we'll make fun of the people that wrote, hey, enter the drawing. That's who we make fun of. Not the people that, you know, English is their second language because they're fucking trying here.
Fair enough.
And at least they passed the fucking – they actually wrote something rather than the fucking people that just responded to a fucking Facebook message or a Facebook post. So go ahead.
This is a username. It's Hayata.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Hayata74 to be exact.
Damn.
Sorry, I'm going to attempt to read this.
We know your age now.
Or you don't know if he's 74, if he was born in 1974.
Ooh, shit.
Maybe 1874.
Oh,
you never know. Shit. You never know. One night after a vigorous session of jerking off, I passed out on top. Don't make me laugh. I'm trying to be serious here.
Yeah, this is super serious, BJ.
This is some serious shit, everybody. Hold on.
One night after a vigorous session of jerking off, I passed out on top of my blankets and dreamed of jerking off while a parade of unsuspecting spectators filled my room. That morning I woke up to my mom doing laundry at the foot of my bed when she made a comment about putting on some shorts before coming down to breakfast. Then she scurried out into the hall. I sat up and realized my pants were still around my ankles from the night before and my semi-erect penis was still in my hand.
I take back anything I said about making fun of this.
Dude, you jerk off and then you dream about jerking off is one of the funniest things. Dude, you got it bad, man. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Mom wearing shorts.
What was his name? Hentai74?
No, it was Hayata.
Hayata. Oh,
Hayata.
Hentai74.
I take back my asshole comments.
Let's be nice. Let's save the assholeness for the people that deserve it. All right. So this is Al. Man, you got a fucking cool email address. Good job getting that. Jesus. All right. So Vinegar Syndrome Porn Embarrassment is his subject. Back in the mid-80s, one weekend, I discovered my dad made a Friday trip to the local mom and pop video store back room. After a quick glance under their bed, to quote Forrest Gump, it's funnier what a man remembers, but the VHS was Aunt Peg Does Hollywood. After they were fast asleep, I did a little crawl into their room, and that would have made a Navy SEAL proud at 2 a.m. fueled by 12-year-old hormones. Once I had the tape, I made my way into the den, turn on the Panasonic VHS that sounded like a garbage truck starting up. I watched it in amazement, but had a momentary lapse of reason when I decided to retain the tape and show it to my best friend Saturday morning. Securing porn back in the 80s was like a military special operation. Kids have it so easy today. Dad discovered it was missing the next morning, pretty simple math, and I was busted. Totally worth it. Good times. All right, Al. I like your story.
Nice.
All right. What we got next, Sean?
Here we go. Jeffrey B. Not hardcore porn, but when I was a teenager, a friend and I stayed up far later than we were supposed to watch. Far later than we were supposed to watch Naked Souls on Cinemax. It's a softcore deal with Pam Anderson and the guy from Stephen King's Sleepwalkers in it. And of course, as a teen in the 90s, the prospect of Pam Anderson's sex scenes was too good to pass up. My mom heard the TV at some point in the middle of the night and came upstairs to see what we were doing only to be greeted by a topless Anderson riding the Catman himself. She didn't even finish her question, "What are you guys do?" before she exclaimed, "Oh, Jesus," and fled back downstairs in a hurry. She didn't speak to us much the next morning.
Was that the end of the story?
End of the story.
Oh, yeah. You passed.
So I only have two left, and they're both pretty long.
Okay.
This one is from Paul C. Back in 1995, when I still lived with my parents, I discovered a porno tape that my dad had hidden in the basement and apparently forgotten about. After watching it a few times alone, I decided I shouldn't keep this magical discovery all to myself. Being the good buddy that I was, I invited a couple of friends over to watch it with me. So the three of us were sitting on a couch in front of the TV looking at the naked sex people when I realized I had to go to the bathroom. Not go to the bathroom, but really actually go to the bathroom. So I left my two buddies on the couch and went upstairs to piss. Just as I was about to go back down to the basement, my mother stopped me at the top of the stairs and handed me a rubber Halloween mask she had just bought. Apparently, she was very proud of her purchase and thought it would be funny for me to walk down to the basement wearing the mask and freak out my friends. She was pretty much sliding the mask over my head before I could come up with a reason to say no, so I had no choice. I slowly walked down the steps, panicking, wearing this stupid Halloween mask, trying to think of a way to warn my friends that my mom was following me, while at the same time making my mom believe I was really trying to scare them.
Oh,
I could hear porno moans coming from the TV, so to cover the sex noises, I tried to say, "Turn it off," but I said it in a growly monster voice so that she wouldn't be able to understand what I was saying, but that just made me sound like Frankenstein's monster. My friend saw me and started laughing, so I waved my arms around in what I thought was an obvious signal to turn off the TV. My mom is coming. But again, I just looked like I was trying to act scary, which made my friends laugh even more. My mom was far enough behind me on the steps that they couldn't see her, so they had no idea what was going on. By the time I was 3 or 4 steps away from being in the basement, I was in full panic mode, which meant I was just waving my arms around more vigorously and growling, "Turn it off!" louder. But by that time, my friends were bored with my antics and just wanted to go back to the porno. Eventually, I stepped onto the basement floor. My mom was 2 seconds behind me and about to see exactly what we had been watching for the last 30 minutes. So I'm standing there feeling stupid in front of my friends for wearing what really wasn't that great of a Halloween mask. And at the same time, feeling like my life is about to end once my mom sees.
Oh my God, I got anxiety right now. Flashbacks.
Well, finally, one of my friends realized what the hell was happening and did this impossible leap from the couch and turned off the TV a split second before my mom would have seen all the sex. And then it was basically just me standing there looking like an idiot in a Halloween mask. My two friends tried to hide their awkward teenage boners, and my mom, oblivious to everything, as she eagerly asked, "Were you guys scared? Isn't this a cool mask?" I know technically I didn't get caught watching porn, but after my friends left, I went to the bathroom again, and this time it was to, quote-unquote, go to the bathroom. Apparently I forgot to throw away the toilet paper I'd used to clean up the mess, because later that night my mom stormed into my room with a wad of evidence in her hand. Oh, in her fist, sorry. She held up the toilet paper between us at eye level and started to yell at me, said I wasn't supposed to use toilet paper for that, and that I'm wasting the family's money because they have to buy more toilet paper to replace what I use. She then turns around and abruptly leaves, and we've never spoken of that day again.
Oh, wow. My God. That literally had some, like, anxiety.
That's a fucking, like, episode to a TV show.
It's so funny.
Oh, my God.
That's great.
Oh, I love that one.
All right.
Who is that?
Oh, shit. Let me go back. Paul C.
Paul C. Okay.
All right. Paul C. I wonder who that could be. Is it really well written?
Yes.
Yeah. I think I know who that is. All right. So this one is by Brandon. He is a very, very frequent listener. Interacts with us all the time.
What's up, Brandon?
So Vincent's Mud giveaway entry. Hey, guys. So I had to be 14 or 15. I was still at the point where I had to use Kazaa or equivalent to download porn. Nice, Brandon. So did I. So when my parents would leave, I would actually download whatever I was going to watch, which would take for fucking ever, and then remember to delete it. Well, one time I deleted it out of the downloads folder, but I completely forgot to empty the grand old recycling bin. So I wasn't caught red-handed, so to speak, but my mom happened to open the recycling bin for some reason and found some less than desirable content. She couldn't even approach me about it, though, and made my dad talk to me about it. Unfortunately, the most embarrassing and awkward moment of my life, I would always remember to check the damn recycling bin from then on. All right, thanks for the opportunity to win some excellent smug, guys. Looking forward to hearing the winner announced. Take care.
Lesson learned, excuse me, lesson learned, Brandon.
God, Jesus, were you like the worst guy with the mask?
Turn it off.
Yeah. Wow, sorry about that. Holy shit.
You know, it's funny because my story, because I could say my story real quick. I never got caught like red-handed like that, but I had the same thing where I had it on the computer at, you know, my mom, you know, when I lived at home, and I was really good about deleting stuff. Well, somehow I left it right on the fucking desktop, and then I went into the kitchen one night to grab something from, you know, whatever, a drink or whatever. My dad was in the computer room, and I heard porno, and I was like, oh shit. And my dad turns it off and he comes out in the kitchen. He's like, your mom told me about what she found. You need to get that off the computer. And then went to bed. And that was me getting caught, but I do have a funny masturbation story. So, all right. So go ahead, Sean.
Okay. Teasing us with your masturbation story. To be continued. All right. This one is from James M. Porn Stash Contest. One time in college.
I know him. He's a listener too, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My friends and I belonged to the radio station where we had a show that was like Howard Stern, but super low budget and definitely not as funny as we thought we were. So after a 3-hour show, we decided to have a bit of a party and we're drinking in the back room of the radio station for about an hour. Three of us, myself, this guy Ryan, and another guy Mike, decide to head out back to Mike's place, which was in part a part of Brooklyn that was pretty far away. Before heading out, we go to the bathroom and go to each of the three stalls. In unison, we all exclaim, "Hey, there's a porn tape in here!" That's right, on each toilet seat was a big box of porn, all in perfect condition, just waiting for us. We laugh about it and take them with us, joking that we will watch them back at Mike's place. An hour and a half later, we finally get back to Mike's and drink some more and decide we're going to sleep. I couldn't sleep, so I decided to throw on the tape that I'd found, which might have been called Big Buns for Fucking 7. Can't really recall. And I'm just watching it, kind of laughing, kind of turned on, but nothing else. And all of a sudden, I hear a sound behind me. A sound that sounded like one hand... sounded like one hand clapping. I turn around expecting to see one of my friends pretending to jerk off behind me, but instead, my eyes met another old man's eyes. He was staring into my soul. Torn tee on, no pants, both hands around his erection, and kept moving up and down, eyes piercing my sanity. I finally exclaim, "Who are you? What are you doing?" "I'm who I am. What are you doing here?" said the person. I guess in the commotion, Mike finally comes out of his half-drunken slumber to see what's going on. "Mike, what the hell, man?" is all I could muster. "Oh, Mr. Lincoln, how did you get in here? And where did your pants go?" Mr. Lincoln was Mike's neighbor and a friend of his grandmother who left Mike the apartment and who randomly would just pop up from time to time in his apartment. But supposedly, this was the first time he was whacking himself there.
Oh, my God.
"Well, what do you expect? You had porn on," said the man. "I didn't expect your old neighbor to do a drive-by jerking. I wasn't aware that it was something that could occur in any time in your apartment. Next time, it's a no free porn watching zone." Holy shit.
I don't have words right now.
Yeah, I don't have anything to say. It just sounds really creepy. It's a home invasion. That's against the law.
That's a home
you
invasion.
You should call the police.
It's an old man whacking it in front of me.
My God.
Thank you, James. I'm really creeped out now. Appreciate that.
Yeah, for serious. Oh, God. All right. Subject. The Porn King of Seventh Grade.
Oh, my God.
By Andy B. So,
all right,
get pumped, settle in. When I was in seventh grade, me and about 10 other boys discovered the capacity of our middle school's bathroom. I had an iPod Touch, a relatively new piece of tech at the time, and I was showing off. The story immediately dates me as being very young, but don't worry, I'm of age now. If I won, it wouldn't be like indoctrinating my senior class with lovely smut on Blu-ray. I've learned my lesson about public displays. My diploma's in a box somewhere. If you remember LimeWire well, you remember that when you would search for something, you would find porn more often than you would find what you were actually looking for. Either that or a fake recording of Bill Clinton talking about some website you never went to. on an old hard drive somewhere that I probably still have, a ridiculous file called Kanye West Stronger Teen. I'm sorry. Kanye West Stronger Hot Teen Fucked by Older Man.mp4.
Right.
The file that got me in trouble, however, was called something like Soup John Stevens Chicago Man Enters His Head Into Vagina.avi. I learned by then not to even bother with the porno or the Clinton, but such a lurid title could not be passed up. I downloaded it and watched it, and it was a sight to see. It's a Michael Chiklis looking motherfucker doing exactly what you imagine he's doing and ending before you find out whether he came out to breathe again or died happily inside. I put it on my iPod. I brought it to school the next day and I showed my best friend. He told a secondhand friend about it, and I showed the secondhand friend, who told his friend, who probably told some kid who spent his lunch times in the gym with his feet of a bathroom stall, because no offense to the guys who came after, but I was robotically pressing play for the footage for some kids I'd never even seen before. Even though I was showing off and I was loving this newfound attention, no matter the source, I was getting a bit sketched out. Lunch was nearly over, and we were about 10 deep in the bathroom watching it on repeat and talking over each other about the logistics of an organ none of us had actually ever seen. I decided to stop the video and get out while I could, but there was a displeased newcomer. He wanted to see the video, but the day's performance had ended before he could. The kid pushed me up against the wall at maybe the worst time possible as the principal walked in to determine the hubbub right at the moment that my scrawny self was being threatened. We were marched single file down to the principal's office. We were each given a slip of paper and told to write down what was happening in the bathroom. I tried to convey to my peers through meaningful eye contact what they should not be saying, but apparently my eyes are only meaningful to me because every single student but myself and the boy who introduced me to the wall were sent to this class scot-free. The boy had mentioned my iPod, which was already verbatim enough at middle school, even though he did not know the true contents. He wishes. He did know that whatever I was showing was pornographic and that it might lighten the sentence if he was maybe to mention that fact. He got suspended for 2 days. I was alone with the principal, who immediately had me pull up the video. I showed it to him. Even if I had already learned every frame by route in the bathroom, this play and the next were the ones that ensured it would never leave my memory. He was ashamed and informed me that it was completely fake. The jury's still out on that one personally, because it's a pretty darn well-produced video. He called my mother, didn't mention any specifics, and she came down to the school. I showed the video to her. I was suspended for 2 weeks and grounded for longer. I got an earful from my father on the phone when he heard what happened. I haven't seen the video since, and I probably could see the fakery now, but regardless, LimeWire porn probably had a larger impact on me than any other attention-starved dweeb who ever lived.
Wow.
Holy wow.
It's incredible.
Wow. Who is that?
Andy B.
Andy B, you fucking rock.
Yeah, you're my All new right. hero.
So this is Josh. Hey guys, and gal, if you're there, BJ. Caught watching porn.
Whoa.
All capitalized with exclamation point. First of all, my dad had a great collection. He hid it in a box next to the VCR. Don't know if that's really hiding, Josh, but okay.
It's not hiding at all.
Lots of porn to watch and learn from. All the greats were represented. When I was 10, I started digging in. Damn, Daniel. Whoa. I used the zero counter on the VCR. Good job, Josh. So I could rewind the exact spot I started so Dad wouldn't get wise. I was 13 and out of school for the summer. I settled in to watch some bedtime tales while Dad was at work. I was mid-stroke when I heard the front door open. Dad was home early. I tried my hardest to abort, and he never said anything. But I feel like he knew what was going on. Love the show. Josh. Josh, you are awesome if you went 3 years that young without getting caught.
Yeah, man. Holy.
And your dad obviously wanted you to watch the porno.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, that was a setup. That was a invitation.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Amazing. All right, I don't have any more.
So does that mean it's our time to tell our stories, Brad?
Yes. Yours is probably going to be great, so I will go with my masturbation story. I never got caught watching porn. I was really good at not letting that happen. So mine was a masturbation story where I got caught, and it's not like anything major happened. It was just truly embarrassing. So, to preface this story, my whole family was in town, basically, like my grandma, my great-grandma, my grandpa, aunt and uncle. They were all staying at my parents' house, our house. So, went to bed, you know, whatever, I'm going to get naked. So, I get naked, I'm laying on my back, I take off my shorts, and I would take – now, this was like – a regular thing that I would do at night. So I would take my shorts and kind of, I would fall out of bed a lot when I was little. So I always kind of had this chair next to my bed. So I would drape my shorts, my boxer shorts, over that chair. So, you know, it was late at night. I've been in bed for like an hour. No one's going to fucking come in. So I just start going to town. My mom that night forgot to give me a kiss goodnight, so she comes in to think that I'm sleeping and, you know, turns on the light, and I'm, like, wide awake with a pillow on top of me because I'm, like, kind of, like, making love to the pillow here. This was last year, by the way. so I, you know, making some dirties with the pillow. Mom comes in, and she, like, picks up the shorts. And it's like, what is this? And why is your pillow? What are you doing? And then my dad comes in, and it's like a fucking sitcom. He's like, what's going on, Karen? She's like, I don't know. His shorts are out here. He's not sleeping. What are you doing with the pillow, Brad? Then grandma comes in. Hey, what's going on over here? And just like the whole family's like waking up and kind of making their way to my bedroom. And basically, I'm laying there naked while my mom stands over me with my shorts in her hand.
Oh, like, my God.
And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I'm never going to get another erection in my life. So, anyways, they all went to bed and I jerked anyway. and that's how I got caught masturbating for the first time.
Nice.
And only time. So
nice. I don't think I have any stories of me getting caught. Because I always had to be super stealthy, because when I was younger, I was taught, there's this track that, you know, these little religious tracks, you know, the little black
chick
ones,
tracks.
Those little black ones, the little comic books.
Yeah. Well, chick tracks. They're the best.
Yeah. Well, there was one, and I was pretty impressionable. There was one that basically, said that if you masturbate and watched porn, you were going to end up gay and go to hell.
Dude, I love dick.
Dude, the logic behind that makes no sense.
Which basically means by now I would definitely be gay, apparently, as much as I freaking jerked it and still do.
Well, I guess they're kind of right, because I did end up a little gay. So, whoops.
Oopsie. Yeah,
I think we're all a little gay, so maybe this is right.
Maybe. I've.
I mean, we did talk about who we would do on the other sex on one episode. I know, huh? So, yeah.
Well, you
Ryan Reynolds, you're still mine.
So I was always like super stealthy if any of that was going to happen. I had a few close calls, but I think I was always able to get out of it. Although I think one time my brother walked in just as I was about to hump a weight
bench. That's the worst.
Or something.
Hump
like
a weight bench?
There's a weight bench right by the shower in a big basement kind of shower room. But I don't know if he actually saw it. I don't know. But it was pretty awkward. That's pretty the only thing I can think of.
All right. So I have
there we go.
Two.
We've all confessed. BJ.
I have two.
Oh, God.
I'll tell the one that's not associated, like the one that's like a getting caught having sex one first, because it's shorter and not porn related. And, the you know, that's kind of the point of the contest. So
gotcha.
The sex one is that I lost my virginity very early because I blossomed very early. And my room growing up was in the basement, but it wasn't so underground that I didn't have windows. Like I had like those little tiny windows right above my head. And if you look up, you can see pretty much people's feet, you know, walking past.
Yeah.
Well, my parents were having a get together with a bunch of their friends, and they were sitting at like the table in the backyard. And my boyfriend at the time and I were downstairs, and we had, you know, just done it for the first time probably 2 weeks previously. And we decided, you know, that we had discovered the greatest thing in the world and we needed to do it as much as possible. So we were like, fuck it, let's do it. And I was like, well, my parents have friends over. And they're like, they're all outside drinking. No one will know. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Fuck it. Let's do it. So we're doing it. And I had been on top most of the time, but we flipped and then I was on the bottom. And like, it was seriously something out of a movie. I leaned my head back on the pillow and looked up and I could see through the window. And there was my mom. Like right in the window, like somebody had like dropped something and it had rolled towards that window, and she was on her hands and knees looking for it, and we made eye contact and she immediately got up and ran away, and we've never talked about it and we never will. Wow. So there's that. That one's good. But the porn story is quite possibly the best thing that's ever happened to me. Shout out to my former roommate, Kyle. He's a drag queen. He's wonderful. You know who you are. Before we were roommates, we lived on the same dorm floor, and we both had kind of an open door policy for each other's rooms, unless we wrote on like the dry erase board if we had a visitor or whatever. My code was always the Chamber of Secrets has been open. Enemies of the air, beware. I'd put that on my dry erase board and that let him know, don't come in here because either I have somebody in here or I'm doing something in here. One day I forgot to put that on the door. And I had a loft bed in college, like my desk was underneath it. So I was up on my loft bed. And if you've been into any college in America, you don't get like fancy, nice wooden bunk beds. You get rickety ass metal, scary prison bunk beds. So I'm on top of my prison bunk bed made entirely out of what's probably repurposed Dr. Pepper cans. And I have my laptop and I have my Hitachi magic wand. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the Hitachi magic wand, if you put sandpaper on this thing, you could cut down a tree. The torque on these things is ridiculous. Ridiculous. So I'm on top of my bed, doing my business, watching porn, headphones in, when my lovely future roommate barges in to my room. Clearly I hit panic mode, but in hitting panic mode, I pull the Hitachi, which is so big that it pulls the headphones out of the jack so that it's just like blaring porn in my room from my laptop. In the frenzy of trying to shut my laptop, I drop the Hitachi, which hits the on switch on the rickety metal and then just vibrates against this metal for like what felt like an eternity. I'm in a loft bed, so there's no way of getting down like quickly by any stretch of the imagination. And my fat ass is not jumping off of a ladder. So I have to like slowly with my pants and my ankles climb down this ladder, turn off the Hitachi while all the while my flamboyantly gay future roommate is in tears. He is laughing so hard and he's like rolling around screaming. And I'm like, Kyle, shut the fuck up. This isn't funny. He's like, no, this is the best thing of my life. This is the best day of my life. He's cracking up. I finally get off the bed, get everything turned off, only to realize at this point he has left the door open. So Everyone on my floor can hear what's happening. They couldn't see it, but they could hear it. God bless America. I'm very sorry, Higgins Hall, floor 13, during 2010. My bad.
That's awesome.
So, oh my God. So there you go.
That's amazing.
Aren't you glad we got more than five submissions?
Jesus Christ.
And this... the best part is that's not even the first time that he had walked in on something like that, but that was the most dramatic and horrifying of all the situations.
The crawl down, the climb down from the bed must have been the longest thing ever.
Oh, it was terrible. And because, again, it's a loft bed in a college, so there's not an angle ladder. It's just straight up and down. Like, you have to pretty much scale a wall to get down. It was terrible.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God. This has been fantastic.
You're welcome, listeners. You're welcome.
I don't know if we're going to have like a contest that's this entertaining ever in the future. This may have topped it, but I hope so. I love having listeners write in. It's fantastic. So we'll definitely keep doing this. I think it adds a lot of value to the show. All right, we're going to do a drawing here. I mixed everything up. And let's see here. Got something here.
And then we're going to pick best story.
Yep. Brandon C.
Brandon C. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You did that. You did it, son.
Bam. You won the smut, sucker. Awesome, Brandon. We'll drop you a line via email. I'll get your address, and I will send this box of beautiful smut from Vinegar Syndrome out to you.
Yeah.
We're now going to choose bonus round. Brad, you have something to give away. What
I have, it's not porno. It's just we have to do some giveaways from – this is kind of funny because now Magnet and I think this is Welgo or Magnet. Basically, Tony Yaz Killzone 2 on Blu-ray, we have a copy to give away. So I figured because Sean mentioned to pick the best story as the winner, which would probably make more sense – but would also make the show probably go on for another 30 minutes discussing which is what, and we'll all have different opinions. So I think we can come to a conclusion of kind of the best story. I think we all should tell our best stories, our favorite stories of the bunch, and the go from there.
All right.
So, BJ?
I just put food in my mouth. Hold on.
Wow. Are we going to have another story after this? You just got caught.
Yeah, putting shredded cheese in my mouth like a homeless person. My personal favorite was probably the LimeWire porn download, getting in trouble in seventh grade. That's just really funny to me. Like, I just had like this visual of all these little kids huddled around like a shitty bathroom stall in a public school trying to argue the logistics of whether or not a human head could fit inside a vagina. That makes me laugh.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed that one too. I don't know. I think the mask.
That was my close second.
Yeah. Sean, I think you got a – do you like either one? So you can...
Well, I liked both of those. I also like Steve's story about Uncle Richard. Was it Richard or –
Oh, yeah, that one was pretty good, too, with all the jock itch.
The jock itch, yeah.
That was my second, yeah.
I definitely laughed the most at that one, but, I mean, Brad, since it's your thing, man, I'll have you be the, you know.
Can you just draw names of those three? Because now I feel like,
hold on.
We didn't come to,
Who was the mask one?
That was, Joey, right? No, it's not Joey.
Oh, I don't remember, and I closed my computer.
God damn it.
Sean,
damn
you
it.
Have them. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I have Steve, Andy, and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting these three into a hat here. I'm going to shake it up. And let's see who wins this bitch.
Is it your fedora?
No.
Oh. Is it your JNCOs? Did you make a hat out of your JNCOs?
It's a cheap hat I got. The brand is called Kurtz. I don't know.
All right. So basically,
here we go. Moment of truth.
You got Killzone 2 on Blu-ray, and then you can masturbate afterwards.
Andy B.
Oh, yeah. My winner. My winner.
You are the winner of Killzone 2.
Congrats on the LimeWire porn. Hope that's the only virus you ever got in life.
All right. We'll be sending you an email to get your address as well. So there we go. Oh, where'd the other? I got
tight.
I better keep these down. I better write these down. Brandon, there you go. There's yours. Okay.
Awesome.
I got to keep myself organized or else people won't get their prizes. Apologies to the Magnolia people who won, who still haven't received those things.
It's going to happen. So basically, long story short, Sean was on vacation. I recently moved into a new house, so I am getting them together once I find what box they are in, and we will mail them out momentarily.
I was the idiot that kept forgetting to send Brad the addresses. Yeah. So, you know.
So it's going
to
happen. We're not going to flake out on that.
No.
So you'll get them soon.
All right, man. I want to thank all of you guys for participating in this contest. This has been the funnest one we've done yet, and this is great. So I guess that's going to do it for this week's show.
Go
visit our sponsors, yo.
What's up?
I said go visit our sponsors, yo.
Visit our sponsors. Definitely check out Vinegar Syndrome and all their movies. The July package is shipping very soon. And also, shout out to Grindhouse Video. Order everything you possibly can through them, grindhousevideo.com. And Wolfman of Mars, of course, for supplying the music. And Kevin Spencer for designing our logo. Also, if you want some awesome coffee, go to check out Coffee Shop of Horrors. And I think that's it, right?
One of us.net,
of course. They're the reason.
They're the reason for the season.
All right. Like, well, thank all of you guys for listening. We'll talk to all of you guys next time.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.